Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, happy Sunday. This is Seeds of Change, and I'm your host, Danielle St. John. Hopefully you guys can hear me okay. I've had it happen twice now where my microphone didn't quite work. And Elizabeth should be jumping on in a minute, but until she is, I'm never really sure if you guys can hear me or not. So welcome. Hopefully you can hear me. Today we're going to be talking about censorship and how it's made its way into so many aspects of our lives, and especially when, in the most important aspect, in my opinion, of our lives, which is getting to the truth, and how censorship and, and different ways of censorship also being, one just flat out government censorship, which we're getting more of an idea that the flat out government censorship is real because of the Twitter files. But then also in other ways, like, for instance, you're having a conversation online with someone or even in person, online is obviously more of a platform. So, let's say you're talking to people online and they start just about something completely unrelated to, race or anything like that. But they start, instead of addressing your point, they start calling you a racist and a homophobic and a bigot and, an anti-Semite and, basically all in hopes that people will just stop listening to you, right? So you're online and, spreading some truth and people are like, oh, well, I don't really want to get my information from that person because they're racist and we can't really trust anybody who's racist, even if you're completely not racist, anti-racist, people will still, they're still programmed to believe that you are a racist and that all racists should not be listened to. And that's another form of programmed censorship. So with that, hopefully Elizabeth is going to be jumping on sometime. And I'll bring up the chat while we're waiting. If you guys can hear me, there's also you can listen to this show online, and there's a chat feature available so you guys can, if you don't want to jump on and be a part of the conversation, you can still chat with us live and, kind of follow along with the audio clips. There is usually a video clip associated with it. So, and that's Elizabeth. Hopefully she can hear me. Go ahead and push one, Elizabeth. Let's just see.
Oh,
hi, can you hear me?
Hey, baby doll. I'm like,
you can hear me. Yay.
By chihuahuas. I'm like, oh my God, I'm late for the show. And
oh my God, I'm getting attacked by chihuahuas too. I've got two of them in my house right now.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
So do I. But mine are more fierce and they just woke
up. I don't know.
Frida
bit me twice.
I have the best chihuahuas. My vet told me, he's like, can I hold them one more time? Because I'll never get
that's
to.
So sweet. They love my kids.
Like, he's never been able to, he's like, I get bit. They're terrible animals, he says.
Well, they are the most aggressive dog breed. I think we all know that.
I was like, wow, not my boys.
I have been bit more times by chihuahuas than any other dog breed, and this is coming from as a professional dog walker.
Wow, that's a wow.
Yeah.
Well, here, welcome to the land of crazy. I'm considering getting a kitten. There's this lady who's got the cutest little kittens. And I'm like, do you deliver a nightmare to my home? Can you imagine if I had a cat in the house?
Oh, my God. You'd have like a Tom and Jerry episode.
It would be all the time. I'm like, what are you doing? No. And basically, it's to keep the mice company, right? Because for those of you that are on the ongoing saga of the mice in my house, they're still here. And I was like, no, because I got rid of my couches. I got new used furniture. And as I'm cleaning the couch, there's these little kibbles. They're taking the kibble, the dog food, and putting it under the pillows of the couch. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I've moved all the cushions, and I'm like, no. And it's not a lot. Like, maybe there's, like, that one mouse that I was afraid was stuck in the house after I blocked off all the holes and stuff. And then there's this little bitty, it's a heart. It's a, you know those little Beanie Baggy toys that have those little hearts, that tags?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? If you,
yeah,
that,
the
there's
tag.
One. There's one. He grabbed it from wherever the hell he found it. I'm like, wow. And it's there next to the little hole in the couch where he lives. And I'm like, oh, my God, he loves me. I'm like, well, then I'm buying him clothes and a cat. little clothes and a little kitten to play with. Oh, man. Yeah.
Oh, no.
So, oh, yes. Well, I'm not. But I think common sense will be like, no, no, we don't need a cat. After all of this. They were all into it, and now they're looking at me like, no, we don't want cats. My neighbor has old lady. They're a couple of old ladies. Then they walk their old dog really slow, and that's what they bark at the most. That's their favorite person. They also have a big old cat that comes out and walks with them. And the dog is so old, he'll lay down in the yard, and then the cat comes out, and it's like, let's go for a walk. And the dogs go apeshit. And I'm like, look at this. This could be us.
You know, I'm convinced I've got the best dog in the entire world. She barks at nothing. She doesn't even bark for treats. She says woo-woo for treats. She's woo-woo. She doesn't, yeah. The only thing that she does is she hunts kitty cats and bumblebees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She cannot help herself. When she sees a bee, she gets fixated. She gets that prey drive going, and she just can't. I mean, I have to pull her away from them. And I keep trying to tell her about the bee population, but she doesn't listen. And it's awkward.
And probably doesn't even care about getting stung. My old gal.
No, she's gotten stung so many times. If she was allergic, she would have been dead 12 years ago. And she's only eight.
I used to have to carry the Benadryl in the car for Marco, my other dog. He was a real dog. He was red, like a red chow mix. And they just loved him. And it was always the face. And passed a little Benadryl to him. Poor little boy.
We had a boxer growing up. Her name was Cinder. We adopted her from the Malibu fire. We rescued her. And dog had so many health problems. And, for instance, like they bobbed her tail and, maybe they had recently bobbed it right before the fires. And when we got her, it was so infected that we had to chop it off even more and just all kinds of health problems. But she got out. She was like a master at getting out. And she was, anytime we opened the door, she bam, and you just could not catch her because she's a boxer. And so we're like, she'll come back. Yes, exactly. So one day she came home and she had lumps all over her. And we found out that she got into a beehive and got stung by a bunch of bees. And she was tired or whatever right afterwards. And she kind of like took a couple steps and just fell over. And we're like, okay, that's not just tired. There's something wrong.
Yeah.
We got her to the vet and she swallowed a bee whole. And it was inside her. I don't know if it was a bee or a wasp or something because it stung her so many times internally.
Oh,
she didn't die, but God, that dog. Yeah.
Wait, she died?
No, she didn't die. No, but she did not die.
Could've.
But we got her to the vet in time. But that dog cost so much money and had so many health problems. Poor little girl. Mm-hmm.
They're worth it, though. They're worth it. Marco, he's my $5,000 puppy. He got into the kitchen at my mom's house where my mom would cook turkeys for her cats. And it would be like, on the chair. The house was just a horror show when you go there. And she's like, did you bring beer? Of course we brought you beer, Mom. Merry Christmas. And here's my dog, who I'm like, she's like, I don't want that damn dog in my house. This is Grandma Judy. She goes, I'm not that dog's grandma, damn it. Like, it's okay. It's so funny. I'm like, I miss my mom. She was just a pain in the ass, but a fun pain in the ass.
Well, speaking of moms, mom's going to be a little bit late today.
Oh, okay. Well, cool. Then I'll tell the story. So I'm there hanging out with my mom for as long as, humanly possible. And before, we start fighting and gets evil and whatnot. And my dog comes back out. And I'm like, oh, my God. Wait, where was he at? He would go, no matter where we go, and he went everywhere with me. No leash. He's the best dog in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he was fine, like, the cat food cans And he would bring them, like, one at a time out, and he'd clean them proper. And I'm like, what are you doing? No. At one of my friend's house, I'm like, how many? Then, do you ever empty your garbage? And it's like, apparently not, because it's like a 15th can that he's got out to clean. I'm like, oh, my God. Cut his tongue and whatnot. But at my mom's house, so same thing. I don't pay attention. Just like, you know. Bottom line, I should have had him on a leash. That would have probably helped this poor boy in his travels of being the garbage. So he comes back out, and I go into the kitchen, and I'm like, oh, my God. Turkeys, cooked turkey carcasses that she just had like a feast for her animal that she had cooked. And I'm like, oh, my God, did he eat this? He probably ate like turkey bones. And, yes, he did. And it got into his intestines, and his intestines exploded, and he ended up with a $5,000 surgery.
Wow.
And then after that, they're like, can't you take care of your dog? And I'm like, I try my best. He would tear his stitches out 3 times. The minute I turn my eyes, he's got them ripped out because he didn't want to wear, I didn't make him wear that little shelf, that little hood.
The lampshade.
So I put boxer shorts on and ace bandages and the little shit, the minute I turned my head and I started playing guitar, back then I used to drink and play guitar all the time. And he's like, there he was, all stitches are gone. I'm like, oh my God, take him to the vet. And after the third time I got embarrassed, I'm like, I can't take you anywhere because they were like, why? They put staples in them. I'm like, oh my God. But then he'd like, you know, he'd eat liver sausage, you know, wrappers, and I'd let him run, right? He's a free spirit. Mm-hmm. And he's a garbage puppy, and it was like, oh my God, he's going to die. After that surgery, he couldn't eat all this garbage that he usually would eat.
Oh, he learned his lesson.
I learned all the tricks to, you know, do the Metamucil in a soup, and that would help to make a sausage casing in his intestine for whatever crap he would eat, and it would save him and whatnot. But it was like, oh my God. It can be like such a stressor, and every visit was $500. And I'm like, oh my dear God. But they're worth it. It's kind of like nothing in the world would be like, that's my boy. But yeah, I had the best vet too. They did the surgery. They couldn't get a hold of me for a moment, and they decided, we're just going to do it, and it's going to cost you $5,000.
Cool.
And we'll give you payments. I was like, thank you so much. Because I was just like, oh, my God, he's going to die. And they were great. But those are
probably before, like, there's things now called care credit where you just, you know, it's like for medical, dental, vision, dogs, credit card for medical stuff. You know, we've used that quite a few times on for Tiva. Not for big stuff, but, like, she has to be on flea medication because there's, you know, we've got super fleas in California. They don't die because we don't have a frost. So, and there's so many dogs in the house. But other than that, like, she's had a couple, like, little problems with her anal glands. Sorry, maybe TMI. But, like, other than that, she's just been very healthy. Just, you know, just amazing.
Well, that's, you know, that's something anybody who has a dog should know about that. I used to be a groomer, the shampoo person in the groomer shop. I was the groomer. But I learned how to squeeze the anal gland. I was like, oh, my, that's – but I didn't realize that that's why they run on their butts. They'll scrape their butts, you know?
Yeah.
They're trying to declutter their toxin. It's a toxin spot on their butt. We have them on their shoulders.
Express.
Shoulders and neck, you know? Yeah.
And unfortunately, hers are a little bit too deep for the groomer to do it. They have to be done internally. We tried it with the groomer. It just doesn't work on the outside.
Hey, buddy boy. Yeah, I have heard of that. Hey, but it's so funny. I fluctuate throughout the years in my way of thinking of how to take care of anybody, myself included. It's kind of like, how do they survive in the wild? They survive just fine. It's kind of like, we don't do nothing.
Yeah, maybe not too well. I don't think they'd survive very well in the wild. Although I don't know, they are like apex predators. Those things are nasty.
My theory is they didn't just like come the minute we had plastic bottles. They've been around forever. You know, there was a time when we didn't have all this poo-poo stuff, and they still survived. But that's where my mindset goes on that. But I do see the value of doing all these little things. I myself, I get the nice puppies that won't bite, so I can do all this stuff myself. And in the kitchen sink, it takes 1 minute.
Yeah.
The
two that I have now are Frida and Frankie, and we call them Frida Lays Incorporated and Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
I love it.
And Frida Lays Incorporated does not like me at all. Franklin Delano Roosevelt puts up with me. But they just attach themselves to the children. Love it. Frida will let Aiden pick her up, no matter what, and wants to snuggle. And with me, it's like this snarling, barking, get out kind of moment when I walk into his room. Yeah, she does not like me. She likes the children. And I'm okay with that. They can hang out.
Uh-huh.
Well, mom's in Brazil. Okay, let's get into today's topic, which is censorship. And I do have... Yes, I've got two videos. One is actually of Russell Brand doing an interview with Graham Hancock, which you know he's one of my favorites. And and that's basically, I started the show. You came in a few minutes after, so you probably didn't hear. But there's so many different kinds of censorship going on. You know, we know that the Twitter files are proving what we know about social media companies. And the government, sticking their hands in there and making sure that even true information is censored, because they're really at the, of the understanding that we're just these, dumb people who can't really handle true information because it might make us vaccine hesitant. And, and so there's that. And then there's also, if you know a truth, and you say it out loud, there's always going to be people who come at you and not even talk about your point, not or the subject you're talking about, but go right after you with personal attacks. You know, you're a racist, you're a bigot, you're a homophobic. And what does that do? It makes it so that, these people who are programmed to believe racism is bad, which it is, they will just take it at face value that everybody is a racist. That is deemed a racist. And so therefore people like Graham Hancock, even though he's married to a woman of color, has mixed race children, get labeled as a racist. And people are like, I can't really get my information from Graham Hancock because he's racist. Regardless of how true it is, the information, if you get labeled as a racist or a bigot or a homophobic or all transphobic, you're going to be censored in the court of public opinion.
And it depends on what public. You're talking about children, indoctrinated, brainwashed children. And, this whole censorship program has gone, it goes back very, very far. And it kind of, they did their test run on when they arrested Julian Assange. And nobody, none of the other journalists, so-called journalists, stood up and had any credibility to stand up against the machine that was bought and paid for to buy them to shut up and tell the lies. My sister was a personal trainer with one of our very well-known newscasters and had an insight into the real corruption. Like, they were told to say lies about the housing crisis. And she was I won't. And for some reason, she was able to keep her credibility, not do those stories, and she's still here. But I don't think, definitely didn't go out on the ledge because she's still here. But nobody went out on the ledge to say, we will die on the Second Amendment and the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. But they let him go to the wolves. And slowly in increments, our freedoms were taken away because we didn't stand up for the true voice of reason.
Yeah.
And it was, it went, now look where we are. You can't say boo about your medical health. It was more of what war crimes. Is this a, There are no just wars, really. If you really, you know, want to do true history, it's all about power and ego and selfishness and corruption. And at this point in time, we shouldn't have wars. We're so enlightened about racism. But no, we're on the verge of World War III, for fuck's sake, right now, because of the nonstop censorship of common sense, the real truth, the real man behind the curtain, and coupled with the brainwashing program, the mind control program that they've mixed the perfect cocktail of tyranny and fascism with the right ingredients for the propaganda.
Absolutely.
Slanders and lies and covers up and defends criminals. It makes you, who stands up against them, the bad person, and we can get the mob mentality against you. And they've used this racism thing. That's my favorite crazy fucking pisses me off in 2 seconds, because they don't know what racism is. They use that word for, oh, I don't like your opinion.
You're
racist. You know, they've lost their knowledge of where they came from, who they are, because everyone has a certain amount of Greek, Lithuanian, Ethiopian, West Costa Rica. You have a plethora of blood. Where did your people come from? Oh, my God, you're racist. No, you need to know who are your people, because you need to stand up and be proud of who you came, who you are. What is your culture? What is your background? What's your history? Your race. Oh, they're insane. They don't know what real fucking racism is. Where, I'm sorry, but we don't let your kind in here. Then we've got that happens now. It happened the last 3 years. People, we had the fucking balls to put on their businesses, no mask, no service.
Yes.
We went right back to blacks sit at the back, blacks not allowed, white-colored water fountains. That's racism.
Yep. Agreed.
They have lost. They don't even know. And anybody who's it's just such racist. They don't even know what the fuck they're talking about. They don't know the countries.
No.
They don't know the capitals of our states or where countries are at. I've been watching several of these ridiculous rounds of, you know, enlightened children that have podcasts. And it's like, oh, dear God, this is, you know, we should have blown the television up the first day that MTV came on, because they are responsible for watching now. They went into the land of, you know, what was that goddamn show? What was that show?
The Real World.
The reality show. The Real World.
Yeah, Real World.
Yes, and it was like these, and that burst the fucking Kardashians and any appetite for watching stupid, overprivileged fucking people try to struggle through what kind of peanut butter they should have for breakfast.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. And now we've got children that have no idea about the basics. And they've been just, we're lost. I'm like, ooh, I can't. We need to do a doing it over with the little ones we have now, because that truly is the lost generation. I don't know what to do with them.
I know.
Because you're smart. You know,
I'm doing my part, and I'm training my children to not be that retarded. Sorry, you can't say that, but I feel like retarded is the right word, because what does the word retarded mean? It means slowed. It's, you know, delayed. It's, you know,
delayed.
And that's what, that's what's going on.
Yeah. I'd have to like find my true dictionary, but it's not, it was a medical term, was retarded, was.
Yeah,
but
it also doesn't have to be a medical term. It's also fire retardant, right? That slows fires down. It's the same thing.
It is, but it's a different pronunciation. But to be, I guess I see what you're saying on that. But how do you say it?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be just a total derogatory term. It could actually be. Saying what is actually going on is that they're slowed down so much that they can't even process critical thinking. So, okay, with that, let's get into this Jimmy Dore video talking about the Twitter files and the censorship there And then mom said she's probably going to be more on time. But this is going to lead up to her Twitter files good news story. So if you're ready.
So 3, 2, 1, roll tape. Yeah.
There was more Twitter files. And there, what's more mind-blowing than the Twitter files revealing the government censorship through social media and the collusion between the intelligence community and social media apps, what's even more shocking than that is the way people are being propagandized to ignore it. It's unbelievable.
It's a big nothing burger.
It's a big nothing burger. Oh, he's just cherry picking. And it's like, what is wrong with you? I know what's wrong with them. They're propagandized because the establishment, they want to censor. The Democrats, people who vote for Democrats, I'm telling you, they enjoy censorship because they think they're censoring their enemies. That's why. They think they're censoring Trumpers and MAGA. That's who they think they're censoring. But in reality, they're censoring anybody who's against the establishment. Anybody who has a counter-narrative to the establishment, no matter how many awards you've won as a scientist, or no matter if you're the leading cardiologist in the country, no matter if you invented the mRNA vaccine technology, you will be censored if you step outside the cult. And now people are ingesting this. People are not fighting back against this, and it's becoming part of their mentality. People who vote Democratic... it's a cult. It is, I know we've said it, it's not hyperbole. It is exact cult thinking.
I think we all owe Scientology an apology.
I think we all do.
Is what this is telling me.
No kidding.
They were never this rough.
So let's get to the story. So I don't want to bury the lead. So it's come out now that they were censoring true stories about COVID that they knew, true facts about COVID, that they knew they were true. Why? Because it might make people vaccine hesitant, and then everybody wouldn't make enough money. It's exactly what this is about. It's about corruption and money and criminals and the government colluding with criminals to silence people telling you the truth about criminals. So Twitter files, number 19, the great COVID-19 lie machine, Stanford, the Virality Project. Virality? How do you say
virality?
That? Virality.
Yeah.
The virality and the censorship of true stories. So I'm going to explain to you this, how this is the government doing it in a second, but I don't want to bury the lead. So there it is. And here's a great one. And one remarkable email. So this is the government. If you see Virality Project, that's the government. That's the United States government. It recommends that multiple platforms take action even against stories of true vaccine side effects and true posts which could fuel hesitancy. None of the leaders of this effort to police COVID speech are health experts.
They're probably marketing experts. Why would they go to health experts for
this?
That's
right. So this really happened. So here, I'll read this to you, and then I'll set it up until I just want to bear. They're censoring true stories because of the truth. So they're going to call you a conspiracy theorist. They're going to call you a nut. They're going to flag your post. They're going to censor your post for saying something that's true because it might affect the bottom line of a corporation. It might cost them some money. Not that you're lying. Not that it's not true. It just might hurt them. And what they say is it might make people vaccine hesitant.
You might stumble your brother from the one true faith.
And the only bad thing about being vaccine hesitant, turns out, the only bad thing is that they don't get to profit. That's really the only bad thing. So true content. So this is what they want to censor. True content which might promote vaccine hesitancy or stories of true vaccine side effects. True post, which could fuel hesitancy. So that's what they're doing. So this isn't about getting rid of crazy people who are spreading conspiracy theories. This is about true stories that is going to cut into the profit margin of Pfizer and Moderna. That's what this is about. It's all about money. Your government is 100% corrupted. Your COVID policy was run on corruption. Your mandates that my friend Graham came on the show and advocated for were being pushed by criminals who were lying to him, and he ingested that lie and then repeated it uncritically, unskeptically. Everybody did, not just him. I did it up until I got vaccine injured. And then as soon as I looked into COVID, everything I looked into, they were lying about. They were lying about transmission. They were lying about natural immunity. They were lying about herd immunity. They were lying about side effects. They were lying about masks. They were lying about lockdowns. There was a plan to handle pandemics. They didn't follow it. They did everything to make you take vaccines. The lockdowns were used to make you take vaccines. They admitted it. So let's back it up. So you remember when they had the U.S. Disinformation Governance Board and this mental case, Nina Jankowicz was going to be the head of it? Remember that?
The real lantern-jawed gal.
Yeah, remember the video surfaced of her singing about how much she loves censorship? Remember that?
Just a spoonful of censorship.
Just a spoonful of censorship. And she's a legit mental case, but she gets to call herself a disinformation expert. And you know how you get to be a disinformation expert? You just write it down in your bio. That's it. That's how you become one. That's it. I'm a disinformation expert and a queer. So when they got rid of this, then the United States government started funding a thing called the EID over at Stanford. And here it is. They're going to tell you. So now that when they got rid of this, because nobody wanted the government doing this, nobody, except some people who vote Democrat.
She is taking donations now for her next,
is she?
Her next project.
So when they got rid of that, when they got rid of this, just you, her and this, they still had to censor you. And so they shifted over to Stanford in this thing called EIP, Election Integrity something. Let me see. They're going to admit that they're doing it. Watch.
Because of the feedback and the ideas from this group, we were able to pull together pretty quickly a project between these four different institutions to try to fill the gap of the things that the government cannot do themselves.
They were going to fill the gap of the of the censoring that the government couldn't do themselves, except they are the government because they're being funded by the U.S. government. They're not an NGO. I mean, they are, but they're being funded by the government.
Is that the old flow chart from before they legalized torture that they had to use to fill the gap?
And here they are. Can you look up what the EIP is?
Election Integrity Partnership.
Election Integrity Partnership.
What?
Yeah. So this is now going over to Stanford, the EIP, Election Integrity Partnership, and there's government, civil society platforms, and media. Look at that.
Why are they handling COVID information?
Because the government, it works for Big Pharma, Kurt.
No, I mean, why is the election integrity thing covering?
Oh, this was about elections. This. So watch the. But then it shifted into COVID.
Oh, good.
So as soon as they got rid of her and that, because everybody freaked out about the government doing disinformation governance board. Mm-hmm. Can you sound more Orwellian? So then they pushed it over to the EIP, Election Integrity. What is it?
Partnership.
Partnership. And so then they start bragging. By the way, so it's a coalition of entities. And Kurt.
It's on the next one, I think.
So here we go.
The Election Integrity Partnership ended data collection on November 19th, 2020. And during that time, the partnership processed 639 tickets on election-related mis- and disinformation, of which 72% were related to delegitimizing the election results.
Delegitimize. So anybody who questions election results or integrity is immediately flagged as misinformation. That's what they're admitting right there. That's it. You're not allowed to have that opinion.
Tech platform partners, Twitter, Google, Facebook, and TikTok, responded directly to 75% or more of the tickets in which they were tagged, a testament to both the high quality of reporting and the value of constructive relationships with the...
Wow. So she's bragging that the stuff that they flagged, 75% of it, they took down.
Yeah. Now people, and you know the best part? People now trust the government more than ever. They're doing great.
platforms. And although EIP did not make specific enforcement recommendations, because those are the platforms to determine in accordance with its policies, 35% of the URLs flagged were actioned under remove, reduce, or inform policies, again, helping contextualize for the public the content that they were seeing.
So they're going to help you because you're too dumb to put into context what information is, and you're going to have assholes like that do it for you. So that's who's going to do it for you. That's the kind of person who's going to decide what you're able to handle. That's it. Like, oh, we can't let regular people read this. It would break their brains. Well, how come it didn't break yours? Well, I'm special. I can read misinformation, and it doesn't affect me. But we have to keep it from people it affects. That's not what's happening.
Well,
that what's happening is they're keeping accurate information from you because they work for the oligarchy. And the oligarchy right now wants to make $100 or $200 billion off of selling vaccines. And go ahead.
Well, so now like your Bill Maher kind of liberal, they transposed all the radical Islam suicidal maniac that I, you know, we got to blow. They managed to put that onto half of the people that live here. So that's why, because this sounds like the exact way they talked when they were like renditioning people, that same bland, like corporate. I've never heard anybody talk like that.
They're talking about it's the banality of evil, Kurt. They're talking about censoring Americans' free speech, and they're doing it in some. This is how spreadsheet, and this is how it works.
And she could be in Germany in the 30s talking about how they contextualized the Jews.
35% of the Jews that we recommended were eventually taken down. So this is what. So now it's turned into this. So that was EIP. Election Integrity Partners has now morphed into this.
It's metastasized.
And it's called
the Virality
Project from Stanford. The makers of that big list of words you can't say. Remember when we covered that? They came out with a list of words you
can't. I've already forgotten the words on it.
Me too. But they're any word, pretty much. So they actually have a Twitter account, and it says a coalition of research entities focused on detecting and mitigating the impact of false and misleading narratives related to COVID-19 vaccines. Well, if there's one group I trust to decide what information I can read, it's a coalition of research entities. And they're being funded by the government at Stanford, and it's called the Virality Project. And they're there to censor you.
Isn't that what Aleister Crowley contacted in that pyramid, a coalition of research entities?
I don't know who's that. What?
Yeah, you never heard of him, Aleister Crowley?
No. Okay. So here it is. That's the report from the Virality Project, memes, magnets, and microchips. What? That's their big report.
Nice corporate art, too, behind it.
Yeah. By the way, not since... So here, look at this. So after the 2020 election, when EIP was renamed the Virality Project, the Stanford lab was onboarded to Twitter's JIRA ticketing system, absorbing the government proxy into Twitter infrastructure with the capability of taking in an incredible 50 million tweets a day. Not since MK Ultra. Have we witnessed such synergy between universities and intelligence agencies? Am I right?
This is really like amazing work, guys.
So 50 million tweets a day, the Virality Project. Okay. So now you can see. So and then here it is. Here's in one remarkable email. There it is. They said, get rid of true stories about COVID. Matt Taibbi writes, it's crucial to reiterate EIP was partnered with state entities like CISA and GEC. Now, CISA stands for Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. That's what CISA, Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. That's a government agency, okay? So they're partnered with a government agency and getting government money. Okay, and they're also with the GEC, which is the Global Engagement Center. That is that's inside the Department of State. Okay, while seeking elimination of millions of tweets, In the Twitter files, Twitter execs did not distinguish between organizations using phrases like, according to CISA, escalated via EIP. So the point he's making is that they didn't make a discern between the EIP, which is supposed to not be a government organ, and governmental organizations. They just as one entity. That's how they referred to them at Twitter. And so here it is. There's their pinned tweet. They haven't tweeted since like last February. This virality project. New report. High harm misinformation isn't going away and must be met with a collective response. Today, Virality Project releases memes, magnets, and microchips, diving into narratives, actors, and tactics that shaped COVID-19 vaccine conversation in 2021. And the irony is they're the liars, that they're the government liars.
They don't tweet anymore?
And they stopped tweeting.
Out like Ebola, like they're gone too quick?
Matt Taibbi says, we came to think of this grouping, state agencies like DHS, FBI, and the Global Engagement Center, along with NGOs that aren't academic, and an unexpectedly aggressive partner, commercial news media. So all these were working together, the DHS, the FBI, the GEC, and non-academic NGOs, and the corporate news media.
That's the military industrial complex, actually. Those are all part of that.
And he calls them the censorship industrial complex.
I guess it's like Lucasfilm is to Disney. It's like a subdivision.
Oh, okay. And so we're going to talk more about that on Friday with Aaron Maté, the censorship industrial complex. That's a great term that they coined. I think it's great. I'll just show you a couple more things real fast. They were worried about Anthony Fauci's reputation. So remember when they released Anthony Fauci's emails and it proved him to be a big liar about a lot of things?
I chose not to read them because I didn't know if they came from Russia.
Yeah, maybe Russia got them.
I don't want to know information unless the right people tell me.
And so here they are worrying about Dr. Fauci's reputation. You want to see it? Here, I'll read it to you. It says, so when they released these emails, they were upset that people were talking about him on Twitter.
Yeah.
And it says, the emails via the Freedom of Information Act has been used to exacerbate distrust in Dr. Fauci and in U.S. public health institutions, as it should.
Wait, he wasn't hacked. It was a legal Freedom of Information.
Yes.
Wow.
But they don't want people talking about it because discussion of Fauci's emails also spread in Chinese on Telegram. And then down here, these networks are keen to foment increased distrust in Fauci's expert guidance and in America's public health officials and institutions. Yeah, you know why? Because they don't deserve our trust. They deserve our distrust, as those emails revealed. But they don't. This is exactly what always happens. Someone else said this, but can you ever imagine a time in history when the people doing the censoring were the good guys? Can you ever point to a time in history when the people doing the censoring turned out to be the people on the right side of history? No, you can't.
And that the right side of history is these people's heaven.
That's right. And here they are. This is all about censoring accurate information. This is about narrative control, because if you can't do this, then you have to start disappearing people. And if you have to start disappearing people, that's a lot harder than doing this. And they can do this right out in the open, and now half the country doesn't give a shit because they've been propagandized into thinking this is some kind of hit job on Democrats instead of what it actually is, an expose into you live in an authoritarian nightmare of a country that is run by in the interest of corporations and big pharma, people pushing experimental medical treatments on you and then shutting up anybody who criticizes them. And do you want to say something?
Let's say I got caught cheating on my girlfriend because of a Freedom of Information request. That could foment increased distrust in me not cheating on my girlfriend. So it has to be.
It has to be suppressed.
It has to be intercepted by someone.
It must be suppressed. So I'll go a little bit more. Reports of vaccinated individuals contracting COVID-19 anyway, natural immunity, and suggesting COVID-19 leaked from a lab, even worrisome jokes. This is what was being censored.
Worrisome jokes.
Worrisome. Do you think I'm kidding? You think I'm kidding? So here it says, this week's top post from a recurring anti-vax influencer on Twitter is by Alex Berenson. They call him anti-vax. Now, the guy sued Twitter and won for them censoring him because what he was doing was giving accurate information. And as I was showing you, they don't care if it's accurate. They care what Big Pharma wants them to do. And so they pretend that this guy, Alex Berenson, is some kind of anti-vaxxer. Instead of what he is a reporter who's showing that you guys are lying. So they just call him an anti-vaxxer. So if you tell a truth that Big Pharma doesn't like about vaccines, you're called an anti-vaxxer.
A bunch of regular people also know this because they know somebody who something happened to and they said, shut up and don't talk about it.
Yes.
So it's just like, we're just not thinking about that.
Here it is. Two incidents illustrate this dynamic. In July 21, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki announced that the Biden administration would begin focusing on door-to-door community-based vaccine outreach. This announcement provoked immediate online outrage, including worrisome jokes.
With violent undertones.
With violent undertones that suggested people should respond to official door knockers with hostility, guns, or harassment.
Oh, so because he announced it, people made jokes.
Yes. People made worrisome jokes.
That's stochastic terrorism.
That is stochastic terrorism. That is exactly right. That is words are violence. This story is important for two reasons. One, as Orwellian proof of concept, the Virality Project was a smash success. Government, academia, and oligopoly of would-be corporate competitors organized quickly behind a secret unified effort to control political messaging. Two, it accelerated the evolution of digital censorship, moving it from judging truth and untruth to a new, scarier model openly focused on political narrative at the expense of fact. So whatever the political narrative was, that was more important than if it was true or not. It's called propaganda.
Hey, if you don't like China, remember you are China.
In one email, the Twitter VP addressed what it called the vaccine passport narrative, saying concerns over such programs have driven a larger anti-vaccination narrative about the loss of rights and freedoms. This was framed as a misinformation event. The fact that people were reporting that vaccine passports are a loss of civil liberties and freedoms, that's considered misinformation on Twitter. Almost always reportable. It encouraged platforms to target people, not posts.
Oh, well.
Using Minority Report style pre-crime logic describing repeat offenders like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. It spoke of a large volume of content that is almost always reportable.
I can't believe all the to-do to just make a shit list. Like,
yeah.
You got to have all this preamble to like, we don't like you. We're not talking about what you're saying. You. That's unbelievable.
VP was repeatedly extravagantly wrong. In one email to Twitter on misinformation, it spoke of wanting to hone in on an increasingly popular narrative about natural immunity.
It doesn't say fake narrative, does it?
But here's what it says. This week we are able to hone in on an ongoing tactics and themes, including an increasing popular narrative around natural immunity. So they're honing in on getting rid of that stupid natural immunity popular narrative. That's what that says. One more. So to recap, America's information mission went from counterterrorism abroad to stopping foreign interference from reaching domestic audiences to 80% domestic content, much of which is true. So that's where we start. That's what I said. You know, they started with Alex Jones and we're going after Al-Qaeda and terrorism. And now it's former president of the United States. It's the leading scientists in their field. It's the leading doctors in their field. It's the leading journalists in their field. That's where it went. It started there. And of course, that's what it always, And that's what I tried to warn them at the Young Turks about, as they were screaming that we need more censorship. And I was like, you know, you guys are on an on, you're an online independent news show. And if you ever break a story, they're going to censor you, right? Well, no worries, because they knew they would never break a story.
Well, can I just say thank you to Radical Islamic Terror for knocking off the terror, because we got our hands 80% more full censoring tweets now. That was cool of them.
So now the censorship is 80% of Americans being censored, and a lot of that information is accurate and true. And so, yeah.
Well, I mean, remember that collateral murder video that that was why Julian Assange
Had
to die?
That one, yeah.
Which, that was true, but
that was
true. A state secret.
That Julian Assange is not in prison for telling lies. He's in prison for telling the truth about the government.
Really, someone told him, journalist, and then he told it.
Yeah, someone gave him some information, and then he published it, which is what journalists do.
And that fomented people in the Middle East who we invaded to hate us.
To hate us, that's what it Not us killing them.
It really changed their opinion when they saw that.
So we're going to talk more. I mean, I don't want to not talk about this. I want to talk about it more. And so we're going to talk about it more on Friday, about the censorship industrial complex. It should be, and the fact that it's not on the front page of the New York Times, or it doesn't lead the news at MSNBC or CNN, means to most people in the country, it's not a story, because the media, owned by the people we're exposing, doesn't want you to think it's a story. And when I say we're exposing, I mean they're exposing. That's what they don't want you to think it's a story. And if Rachel Maddow and Anderson Cooper say it's not a story, then it's not a story.
Oh,
and that's
so what?
That.
Nothing even happened.
Go to JimmyDore.com to see my new stand-up special, COVID Lies Are Funny. For only $10, you get to become a premium member, too. And come see us do our live shows. We're going to be doing stand-up comedy in Milwaukee, Nashville, Honolulu, Los Angeles, Northampton, Massachusetts, Syracuse, New York, Cohoes, New York, Hartford, Connecticut, Baltimore, Maryland, and more. Go to JimmyDore.com for a link for all those tickets.
Okay, I know that was a lot, but it's so important that we see what is going on, and that we make sure that it doesn't happen again or continue to happen. So Mom's with us now. Her hand's not raised. She hasn't pushed one up. There she goes. I think she might be ready for the good news report. That's pretty good timing. What do you think?
It was excellent timing. And he got an overview of Twitter Files 19 way better than I did last week. And so, well done, Jimmy Dore. He's a pro. Yes. Hi.
It was good. It was good. Hey, Carla, how are you? Happy Sunday.
I'm all right.
Just want to give a shout-out also to the listener in the chat room. So, hello. Welcome. The audio that we just played is also in the chat in case anybody wants to go back and watch it. There is some visuals that might help some people, but just wanted to say hello.
Awesome.
I invited two people.
So hopefully maybe one of them is here. And it's the same topic, and this is a very timely topic. And so what do you got for us, Carla? How are you?
Well, I'm all right, sort of. Cool. My butt is kicked. I have roses in my cheeks, because the sun finally came out. We've had
Yay.
Three full days of sun in a row, and everything is drying out beautifully. My friend is in the coop run as we speak, building a structure, because we had a disaster this week. I don't know did I tell you about this last week? I came home from work, and apparently we got 2 inches of rain in 40 minutes.
Nope.
Danielle has posted on Facebook, in case I'm sure a lot of listeners follow her, that since October we have gotten 17.35 inches of rain.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that 40-minute span, that 2 inches of rain destroyed their little canopy, the thing that keeps them shaded during the day and keeps the rain off of them when it's raining, and it all just came tumbling down. So we're building something slightly more permanent.
Well, that's good.
That structure, they think it protects them from hawks, but mainly it keeps their food dry, and so that we can keep their, you know, because I stopped fermenting during the winter. Anyway, so it keeps their food dry, keeps them dry. They have a safe place to hide. And so anyway, so we're building something right now. But as usual, the minute the sun comes out, I've overdone it. So I'm a little bit stove up, shall we say.
Aww.
A little bit sore. Definitely tired. And happy because I have sun on my face.
Yes, that's great.
Well, the sun's good for you. The exercise is good for you, even though it's hard.
More rain coming on Wednesday, but hopefully we will be a little bit better prepared. Each time we get a downpour, we're doing things just a little bit differently. And
hopefully it'll have the 78 ready by then. Like I don't think a lot of people would know about it, but we've got a gigantic sinkhole in one of our major freeways in San Diego. So, I mean, an incredible sinkhole. Like half of the freeway is just gone.
Africa is splitting in two. Nobody is reporting on the earth is like opening up. I think perhaps we're doing too much underground digging. Maybe it just seems crazy that roads are just whoop sinkholes.
Just gone. It's massive.
Well, Elizabeth, to your point, the place where this sinkhole opened up and is there is so much development right there. We're talking heavy land use, multi-use apartments, Home Depot, shopping centers, everything right at super concentrated in this one little area.
Mm-hmm. And it's on a sandbar.
Yeah. And
they built it on a sandbar? Of course they did.
Yes,
idiots.
The San Diego River. San Luis Rey, San Diego River runs through it, and they have tried to compartmentalize this little river for the entire time they've been trying to develop this area.
Mm-hmm.
And so and we've had so much water so fast in the last couple of months. But Danielle, you said, I hope the 78 will be open. It's not going to be open for months.
No, I know. I saw it the other day, and my jaw just hit the floor. Like I'm not doing it justice explaining how big it is, but it's incredibly big. It took out the westbound side of the 78 freeway for a good quarter mile. And hard to wrap our heads around how big this is, but it's pretty big. It's very big. They're it'll be open by Monday. We're like, nah, no way, no way.
That's a canyon. That's scary.
I drove by it on the other side of the freeway, and I posted on Facebook, if you're planning on using State Route 78 tomorrow morning, forget it. As a matter of fact, if you're planning on using it for the next month, forget it.
To North County if you don't have to. Don't get on that freeway if you don't have to. It's just insane. And the surface streets are, of course, taking the brunt of it, right? So, stay out of North County 78 corridor if you possibly can. Zach's with us. I'm going to let him into the conversation, and then we'll get into the good news.
Hey, Zach.
Hey, Bill. I'm so glad you came, Zach. You're one of my favorites. How you doing?
Good. You've seen Anchorman. I was just wondering, is it San Diegon or San Diegoan?
It's San Diegan.
Well, as a former Scripps rancher, let's say one thing I saw one time is that these guys dive into what looks like kind of just a drainage ditch, and it was a cave in Florida. And this is everywhere. What I didn't realize is that when you see water above ground, there's three times amount below ground.
Yeah.
And so they're underground caves, and these folks had diving equipment and stuff and went through these. I would never do this, and diving scares me, you know, to get into these small spaces like a cave underwater is crazy. But so they were going underneath and following, and you could see all the plastic and stuff getting pushed underground into the water supply underground. So if the plastic is on the surface, you know, like you see kind of like in a parking lot, there's a drainage ditch and like a little, you know, they literally went into that, okay? And they went underground, and they're underground for like an hour and came out at another place. And, you know, so there's all this water underground. And, you know, you said that there was a river there. So just picture that. Just picture, you know, for whatever's up top, there's a lot below.
Right, exactly. And they're saying that it was culvert failures, but I don't know. I don't know about that. It's just the mass of it is even hard to comprehend.
What was their explanation?
Culvert failure. And I will tell you that for years, that part of the 78 has flooded whenever we get any rain. And
yeah,
so
you can see like ducks swimming by and stuff.
Yeah. It was too much water too fast. That's the answer.
So it's basically something that a lot of money will help fix, right?
Yeah.
Well, you guys got to start drinking faster. Drinking some more water. Southern California.
Yeah.
Get out your Padre cup. Do they still have the Padres? I don't know.
Yes,
we do have the Padres. We do not have the Chargers anymore.
Oh, traitors.
Yes, they are. So let me know when you're ready for the good news. I'm glad Zach is here. I'm glad we appreciate all the people that listen to our show because we think we have a message to share with people. So you let me know when you'd like me to do the good news.
Anytime you want, honey.
I'm ready.
We want to make it easy.
All right.
Let's have it.
So speaking of timely, today I wanted to talk about St. Fauci, the Fauci, Anthony Fauci, the man.
Tony Science Fauci.
Tony Anthony Science Fauci, yeah. So this man apparently, first of all, is the highest paid employee, was the highest paid employee in the federal government. He was raking in a whole lot of my tax dollars, first of all. Of course, we could follow the money, and I believe, and it is my opinion, and it's based on lots of research, that he was also raking it in from a whole lot of the pharmaceutical companies. The knock on Fauci from years and years and years ago, during the AIDS epidemic, was that he was pushing treatments that made people really sick and didn't work. Sound familiar? Yes. So I'm going to read a couple of things from one of the Anons that I follow. And his name is, I'm sure I'm going to beat this guy's name up, Kanikoa the Great. You can follow him on Telegram. I think he got his Twitter account reinstated.
They do good stuff. That's good stuff on that one.
Yep. I like this guy. Problem is he had a long thread, and I started at number 5, and there must have been a reason why I did that. So I saved these. Danielle and I use Telegram a lot. There's lots of good information on that website. Lots of diggers, as they say, Anons, and they dig up just some amazing stuff. And this guy, Kanikoa the Great, is one of the ones that I follow that I trust, right? Because, you know, any old somebody can post stuff. But there's ones that, you know, I sort of sort through and that I'm like, okay, so this person is posting, you know, legit stuff. And he's one of them. The Library is another good follow. It's Harold Finch, the Library, Tracy Beans. So I downloaded some stuff about the Fauci, and it said, so I started on number five, and there must have been a reason, but it's by starting somewhere in the middle. The Bush administration was requesting $2 billion in the annual budget for biodefense. So this has been going on for a while. They've been cooking this up for quite some time. And when I say this, I'm talking about the COVID scandemic. So back in 2003, the Bush administration, that was back when they were creating the Homeland Security Department, starting wars, and creating all kinds of departments to, quote unquote, protect us from foreign threats, ostensibly. So in his 2003 State of the Union address, the Bush administration asked for $2 billion in the annual budget for biodefense. And President George W. Bush announced an additional $6 billion for Project BioShield, security with a major research and production effort to guard our people against bioterrorism called Project BioShield. The budget I send you will propose almost $6 billion to quickly make available effective vaccines and treatments against agents like anthrax, botulism, toxin, Ebola, and plagues. We must assume that our enemies would use these diseases as weapons, and we must act before the dangers are upon us. And then there's an article to back it up in the Los Angeles Times. The Los Angeles Times noted that the non-military biodefense research budget increased from $60 million in 2001 to $317 million in 2002, and the Bush administration was now requesting $2 billion in 2003, which exceeded the combined research budget for breast and lung cancer, stroke, and tuberculosis. The money would fund new high-security labs, universities, and government agencies for work on vaccines and treatments for biowarfare agents. But some experts question the security concerns of experimenting on these types of exotic pathogens. This started a long time ago, folks. And here's our buddy Anthony Fauci, NIAID Biodefense Research. And there he is. I know you guys can't see it, but that's the website, the webpage that they use. From an archived version of NIAID's biodefense website, Dr. Anthony Fauci details how the Patriot Act placed him on top of the nation's biodefense infrastructure. Homeland Security is a multifaceted endeavor of which biodefense is a critical component. Our nation, this is, I'm quoting Anthony Fauci from the website, the biodefense website that they funded. Our nation's ability to defeat and counter bioterrorism depends to a large degree on the information generated by biomedical research on dangerous disease-causing microbes and on the immune system response to these pathogens. Much of his research is supported by the NIH and NIAID, NIAID. The role of NIAID biodefense research is to develop the tools necessary to protect civilians from potential agents of bioterrorism. Since the fall of 2001, the NIAID has moved quickly to accelerate basic and clinical research related to the prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of diseases caused by potential agents of bioterrorism. So back to the, he just re-mentions the budget for biodefense. In 2002, Anthony Fauci described how the distinction between bioweapons and biodefense does not exist, as later demonstrated by his gain-of-function research. I found myself, again, never imagining that I would be doing this, needing to learn from people that I never thought I would be learning things from, namely bioweaponers. People who are our own bioweaponers in the U.S. decades ago, international figures, people from other countries, the U.K., and also importantly, this is, I'm still quoting Fauci, and also importantly, defectors, particularly from the Soviet Union, who had vast experience in the ways of biowarfare. Then they moved through, and they decided they were going to reinvent Project BioShield, this was number how Dick Cheney created Anthony Fauci. So here we go with the what's that character from Star Wars that they used to call Dick Cheney? I forget.
Oh.
Pop Anybody? Quiz. You know, the bad guy. They all called they hated Dick Cheney. They thought he was a spook, and he was.
Darth Vader?
Yeah, that's right. Is that the...
They called Dick Cheney Darth Vader because he was everybody believed he was a spook.
Well, he lived without a heart for 18 months. I mean, come on, that's not human.
Yeah,
he's a cyborg.
Cyborg. Okay, with the stroke of Bush and Cheney's pen, all United States biodefense efforts, classified or unclassified, were placed under the aegis of Dr. Anthony Fauci. Fauci now had a virtual carte blanche to not merely approve, but design and run the kind of research projects he sought, and could do so with no oversight structure above him. Formerly would have fallen under the authority of military or intelligence agencies, were now under his direct supervision. So here we go. We're going to talk a little bit about how much this demon was paid over the years with my freaking money. It's this that explains one of the most bewildering irregularities surrounding Anthony Fauci, his compensation. As widely reported, Fauci is the highest paid member of the federal government, out earning the president, four-star generals, senators, and super court justices. His salary roughly doubled that of his own nominal boss until recently, NIH Director Francis Collins. Fauci's giant pay packet can be traced back to 2004. George W. Bush, the year after NIAID was made agency. Dr. Fauci, this is from his pay stub, I guess, more from Kenokia the Great. Dr. Fauci was approved for a permanent pay, listen to this, a permanent pay adjustment in December 2004 to appropriately compensate him for his level of responsibility, especially as it relates to the work on biodefense research activities. From 2004 to 2007, Fauci received a 68% pay increase from $200,000 to $335,000 a year. In 2014, reports of high-profile lab blunders at U.S. government labs involving anthrax, bird flu, and smallpox hit the press. The United States has spent billions on the Project BioShield Act, a program meant to keep its citizens safe from bioterrorists. Despite these good intentions, that program may have put the nation at greater risk of homegrown disease escaping from a lab, quickly infecting millions. That's because while the real threat of bioterror is minimal, there have been only a handful of such attacks in modern history, and none since 2001. The risk of bio error is actually quite high.
I've heard this about this. People who follow the DNA of various diseases and from Ebola and others and SARS have traced this to labs.
At this point, there's no question in my mind, Zach. These MFers have been planning this, and you can't even convince me that it's accidental anymore. Since 2002.
I'd like to put a little asterisk by that. And Robert Kennedy Jr. did a little bit on this piece of what you're talking about, this complex of industries in the military and pharmaceutical complex, which I think he kind of phrased it as in the second movie that they did about his book, about the real Tony Fauci. And and what I would like to say is that you can go at least 5 years before that, where the civilian government and the Pentagon were war planning and rehearsing biological releases in major cities that would parallel what you saw in 9/11 and the anthrax attacks. And these were sitting members of the Clinton cabinet, okay, assistant secretaries of state, multiple star generals, commanders of regional theater, you know, so highest level administrators in the Pentagon brass, and they were practicing it, you know, to one day implement it. That went back at least to 1997. Before that, the program, when it was at Syracuse, was at Harvard, and I think that kind of drove him out of Harvard. But you can do things in universities, and I think you suggested this. You can dress it up and do certain things at universities that you can't do in Washington, D.C. So if you do the research or you do these simulations with policymakers in D.C., there are a billion eyes on it, and it's very scrutinized. But if you can farm it out to universities, then they can create these things under multiple shields, and they can do simulations with sitting administrators, you know. And then when the day comes, yes. It just looks all too real. They've already practiced it.
Yeah. Yes. And so because of that, you are correct. And I didn't know it went back that far, but obviously at this point.
It goes back further, actually. It goes back to the 1950s with Operation Sea Spray. Now, I understand that was maybe possibly not a partnership with the government, but it is, it is something that the CIA was doing experiments. Operation Sea Spray was in the 1950s where they, the government released bacteria into the fog in San Francisco to see how many people would get sick. It killed a couple people. You know, this is not something that is new at all.
Correct. So here's what happened.
God, that's
so,
incredible.
So 2014, yeah. 2014, there was a bunch of these quote-unquote high-profile lab blunders, which, I question that. I think at this point, I think it's deliberate. It's just my opinion. So what happened was a bunch of Cambridge working groups, more than 300 top scientists, penned an open letter demanding that President Barack Obama shut down Dr. Anthony Fauci's dangerous gain-of-function research. So this guy is evolving, okay, and he's pushing the envelope. And, you know, because of these lab, quote-unquote, lab leaks, a bunch of researchers said these are dangerous, what this fucking idiot is doing. The authors included four Nobel laureates and scientists from Harvard, Stanford, Johns Hopkins, Yale, MIT, UCLA, Oxford, Princeton, and all of the world's top.
That's also the administration. The Obama administration's target, you know, has been pegged as creating these labs in Ukraine.
Right.
Interesting.
So you're right. This is where it gets interesting. Okay. So because we've got these people sounding the alarm because of this of these lab leaks, right? In October 2014, President Obama announced a pause on Dr. Anthony Fauci's dangerous gain-of-function experiments. Like Robert Kennedy Jr. told Jimmy Dore, Obama's moratorium paused 18 gain-of-function experiments, according to the NIH. So to your point, Zach, instead they just farmed them out all over the freaking world. They didn't stop. They just moved them. After the pause on gain-of-function research, Dr. Anthony Fauci, USAID, CIA, DOD, and other U.S. government agencies worked with Dr. Peter Daszak, Echo Health Alliance, and Dr. Ralph Barrick, Fauci's coronavirus research, to Dr. Shi Zhengli in the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And we also know, as you said, they moved it to Ukraine. They moved it to China. Okay? They didn't stop. They just moved it. There's a well-documented scientific paper trail of Dr. Fauci funding Dr. Barrick's bioweapons research and that knowledge being transferred to Dr. Shi Zhengli at the Wuhan lab. The NIH decided the risk was worth it. In a potentially fateful decision, it funded work similar to Barrick's at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which soon used its own reverse genetic technology to make numerous coronavirus chimeras. Unnoticed by most, however, was a key difference that significantly shifted the risk calculation. The Chinese work was carried out at a biosafety level 2, a much lower tier than Barrett's BSL 3+. By design, I don't know. That's why Senator Rand Paul accused Dr. Fauci of funding super virus research in the U.S. and making a huge mistake by trading the know-how to China. Fauci denied the accusation, of course, stating categorically the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute of Virology.
You know, there could be people that would go to prison for that kind of technology transfer. Okay, with another country that we are not on, you know, have explicit treaties with, that people go to prison for that. You know, I don't know why legal.
You know, people go to prison for speaking out against Fauci. Research lab woman, big Mikovits, in prison for 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Pointing
out
that she needs to kill AIDS patients with
you're right, back in the
80s.
Elizabeth, you're absolutely correct. That's why they shut us down.
Yeah, that's why I still don't have a YouTube channel, because I got taken out for dangerous medical misinformation, and it turns out everything I said was true.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous to have the truth out. Yes.
Dangerous thinking.
It is. It's dangerous thoughts.
Yeah,
that's the new term.
Wrong thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dr. Robert Redfield, the former CDC director, told Congress last week that he believes Dr. Anthony Fauci used American taxpayer dollars to fund the bioweapons research that created COVID-19. I think it did, quote Dr. Redfield, not only from NIH, but from the State Department, USAID, and from the Department of Defense.
So USAID had money doing this?
Yes. Hmm. Okay, so...
I think
Dr.
Redfield is about to get suicided. I don't know.
He probably is. So the final thing that I want to share about along this thread is Dr. Fauci has, because he's getting called on the carpet. I mean, he is nominally, we're heading in the direction of holding this guy accountable and all of the people. And of course, it's going to be difficult and, you know, nothing may come of it. Senator Rand Paul responds to Fauci's documentary saying it is molecularly impossible that SARS-CoV-2 came from the Wuhan lab. This is what Fauci is saying. He's arguing a straw man, according to Dr. Rand Paul. The lab in Wuhan has over 100 coronaviruses that they've manipulated but have not published. In 2018, they asked the USG for money to do research where they would take a coronavirus and insert a furin cleavage site. So I don't know what a furin cleavage site is, but obviously it is to gain the function of a coronavirus. So... I think we're getting closer. I don't know if he will ever be held accountable because he quit. He retired just at the right time for the new Congress to come in. It was one of the reasons why Republicans took the House, was because of Dr. Fauci and because of what people are waking up to. And I just feel like there's millions of us that know it. Robert Kennedy Jr., even though they've tried to marginalize him, he's bulletproof. People like Jimmy Dore are preaching to the population that would have believed anything that came out of Fauci's mouth.
Yeah.
More people are saying, look, we believe that this came from the lab. They've been running interference. The Atlantic, the New York Times, and a couple of the other, quote, NPR, have come up over the last few weeks with something called a raccoon dog.
I really hope those are real.
The raccoon dogs do exist. It's not a raccoon.
One.
It's pretty cute. It is a dog that looks like a raccoon. And
he looks like a collie.
Cute.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so a lot of people will be like, oh, how cute that dog is. That is so cute.
And it's got a striped tail.
So they're trying to get the world to watch the birdie. so that we will stop asking these questions. And what better way to do it than with a really cute dog, because we love dogs, okay? Although Fauci tortured thousands of beagles, so I hate him. I think he's satanic for doing what he did to all those poor little beagles. And I think the raccoon dogs are really cute, but it doesn't negate the fact that he tried to kill half the fucking world.
Right. And actually, if those dogs were really at that market, they were to be eaten. So,
yeah.
Sorry to be a buzzkill during the good news report, but I still want one.
They are really cute. But
feeding your backyard, they come. They're everywhere.
Yeah, I'm not going to be distracted by Fauci showing me a cute dog. I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to go over to my good news folder, just cover a little bit.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm reading. One of the actors from Star Wars suddenly collapsed. He was 56. Outside. More people they're suddenly collapsing. They're just dropping dead. Their heart's giving out. These are in the prime of their life, one after another after another. And this, no one's talking about this.
Hashtag papers, please.
Papers.
Yeah, but the statute for limitations on murder never runs out, even if you do retire from decades of medical corruption.
Can I say one thing about why they're looking at the furin cleavage with DNA? Like, here's what this means. So this is a combination of proteins, and so DNA or proteins, or the other way around. Proteins are made out of DNA. And in order to change them, you have enzymes. And so enzymes are like are basically engineers, and they build and unbuild. Okay, it's really simple. And what they're looking at is specific combinations of these proteins at this site, at this place, okay, in all of these genes. And in one specific place, there is some common denominator with bats. But the issue that I've heard people raise is that, so that's why people would be using bats, for example, to do research. But bats and humans have some key differences, and the differences are that what they found in the COVID cases that people have is that this is, and potentially the labs, is that they were working on human arginine. Okay, so not bat arginine. So that's an amino acid, right? So in other words, it looked human. And so how could something that came from a bat, or that you were studying with bat proteins, arginine specifically, get and work and then look like human arginine? So in other words, they designed it with human DNA in mind. Okay, that's the smoking gun, what people are pointing to.
Could they actually be using human, because they have a whole wealth of the Uyghurs over there. They're doing whatever they want. This is just a smokescreen for the fact that they're actually doing human experimentations in China.
Genocide over there. But everywhere, my point is that this is, when you talk about this furin cleavage, they're talking, and then they bring in bats and stuff. There's some similarities, but this is the smoking gun that says they were looking at a specific protein. Like in COVID, there's a specific human arginine, okay, not bat arginine. So it couldn't come from, it wasn't like, you just said that it wasn't coming from Wuhan. It would come from an earlier sample. It would come from human arginine, okay? And so someone designed that, okay? Someone built that. And that is the smoking gun of, is this thing, did it evolve naturally and come from nature? You know, and they were studying bats that were just infected with it. That's garbage.
Show me the bat. If they're really like honestly going to try to say this, that it came from bats and all that, I want to see the bat. If you know it for sure, show me the bat.
Human arginine in it? How the receptor site in the human arginine? You know, so they have the wrong stuff.
Yeah, exactly. This is the same kind of deal as when Fauci was trying to say that AIDS came from people having sex with monkeys. You know what I mean?
That's exactly the same playbook. Yep. There you go. So that's why this is, you know, they're really concerned about this now, because once someone has figured that out, then there's no excuse. There's no explanation except that someone created it.
And simply by reading the papers that came out of the Wuhan lab, we have all the proof that we need, right? Because science doesn't work like, you know, we're going to put some major, major money into something to be studied and never have a paper that backs it up. There's been plenty of papers out there that show that they were doing very similar things, like maybe only 4 sites instead of 5 sites and things like that. It's like the reason that they had to hide this is because if anybody knew anything, they could look at these papers and say, well, yeah, it's really clear that this is where it came from, right? And they couldn't have that happen. So that's why they had to censor everything. That's why they had to make it so that, you know, you're a racist if you think it came from a lab, even though it was American funding, you know? I'm sorry. It's not my time.
No, you're right. You're right on it, because they got busted. This is not medical research to help humanity. These are bioweapon labs. They're creating viruses in order to unleash them on a population. Mm-hmm. This is not cancer research. Bioweapons have been deemed illegal all over the world. We're not supposed to use these. Therefore, these labs shouldn't be anywhere, not anywhere in Ukraine, in Florida, in Kentucky, in Wuhan, in anywhere they have them stashed. That's like, it's a faux pas. They need to be closed down because we can't use them. Mm-hmm. Have they banned anything on this planet yet?
Okay, so nothing. You guys, bless your heart. I'm going to return to my coop project. It's looking really good out there. I will post pictures on the Seeds of Change thread. And I will see you guys next week with more information. I'm going to keep digging about Dr. Fauci. We'll see what else comes up for the good news. I think this is good news. We're getting closer, and we're going to get this guy. I want you all to have a wonderful week. Peace be upon you, okay?
All right, love you.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Okay. So yes, that is good news. You know, people are waking up to this stuff slowly. You know, you'd think that once all this information was out there, that more people would be like, huh, you know, but it doesn't really seem to be that way because there's so many distractions, of course.
Well, you know, Zach, did you listen to that Jimmy Dore video that she played before you came on?
I caught most of it.
Okay. The one very interesting part of that was, And Jimmy didn't know who Aleister Crowley was. I was like, point that way.
Yeah, because, I thought that was kind of weird, too.
But that's okay, because, you know, not everybody can know everything. You know, that's why conversation is good and you learn things. But, he was an occultist. And the way that they have, you know, nobody will listen to anything. It's almost like we're under this great hypnotist spell. Because let's go back to the premise that perhaps someone's casted a very evil spell upon the world. and it's not just the fluoride, but it could be, a combination.
I think it's a combination.
That they've been using these mind-bending, lightly sprinkled chemicals into the atmosphere that adds to the pimp effect of, you know, getting everybody subdued and they'll listen and be afraid, and then the gaslighting and the whole, you know,
can't help.
The experiment that they used in the original, you know, bioweapon labs were Auschwitz, where they had Mengele, who did all these incredible, horrible science experiments of how to control people. And they came over here and we continued it. But every single, and I don't like it to talk out, because when you put things in words, it's like when you incarnate a spell, right? You need to speak these things out loud, and they come to fruition. That's why prayer is so important. It works. The stuff works for good and for bad. So I don't remember this guy's name, but I'm not even going to look it up because I'm not going to speak his name. But back in England, in a few hundred years ago, the Queen of England had her own sorcerer. It's not unheard of that these governments have always had a certain prolific. They have leaned upon witchcraft in the black occult in order to gain power and to control people.
Well, the Queen of England sits on a throne on top of a meteor, a magic rock.
Yes.
All right.
Exactly.
Right there.
Yes, and it's still there. It's still there. She's not.
How is the lady with the magic rock or the king of the rock, king of the magic rock?
Yeah. How is she?
Well, no, I mean, so you're talking about, when you say things, and I was recently sharing a film called Baraka, which was about spiritual practice around the world. If you haven't seen it, it's a landmark documentary about spirituality, and it was done several years ago, I think in the 90s.
Cool.
And he's in South Asia, and he was actually in Bali observing some of these people sitting around in a circle chanting. Okay.
Right.
And so the vibrational frequencies have always been associated with healing and ritual space and the construction of ritual space. Shaman do their thing or say their words of incantation and whatnot, of spirituality, whatever you want to call it, within a ritual space, usually where people are creating very low harmonic frequencies, right? And so the drum comes to mind. Drumming around the world. Some of us are familiar with kind of the relationship with matter, like some of the famous bridge collapse when people were walking on it and at a certain frequency and there was a certain noise in that valley that caused a harmonic destabilization of the bridge. The bridge collapsed.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So, and we've always thought about the glass that when someone, opera singer sings very loud and hits that high pitch frequency, which is a very fast frequency, the glass shatters.
Right.
And, so homeopathy, which is healing medicine from Europe, from the land of the lady with the throne and the rock, is vibrational and like plucking a acoustic string and having a frequency communicate and provide information. So, this is information transfer, and more, this is kind of the way we're thinking about cellular communication, too, and consciousness. So I don't mean to get so far afield, but when we talk about magic, those are very specific frequency manipulators or mass psychosis. There's always a repetition element of it. There is a frequency element of it. So they're getting the frequency, even pre-programming. Pre-situating with movies and concepts like that. So I kind of want to paint it that way. And Aleister Crowley, I didn't catch that part. What is he involved in all this?
Well, that's a whole. Maybe we should save that for another another show, because that could be a whole other show.
But in a nutshell, why did he call Elizabeth? Yeah.
They learned how to conjured up someone from another realm, an evil little imp.
With a pedophile.
Aleister Crowley. This was on Jimmy Dore?
Who is it?
Yeah, but Jimmy Dore didn't know who he was talking about.
It was
Kurt Metzger who said it.
Oh, okay.
And it makes him trying to make a joke about it, and he's like, who's Aleister Crowley? And Kurt's like, you don't know who Aleister Crowley is? And he's like, no. And then they just moved on.
Yeah. You could spend a whole hour, 3 hours about civilization in that one.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
But the point was on that is he hit on it because it was speaking of manipulating words and the mastery of the spell. And it's like we are under this fucking spell and those harmonics, and they've got everything going from all directions.
And he referenced the pyramid
to where you're never going to even go away from what they're, they're telling us that anyone who's speaking these bad words and thoughts are bad, and that's their
bad people,
hypnotic,
or disharmonious.
And they are just they got this spill going on the population. And it's like, you need to pull back and realize you're being manipulated on such a huge level that you almost need to, like, totally unplug and just take a deep breath and really regroup with reality. Because what you're being bombarded with is not reality. And if you want to look at – could it – when you look at it, is it could be a black spell, an occult
spell. Yeah, it is a black spell.
And then you're like, wow, how can I protect myself from this? You draw close to the light. You just get protection around you. It doesn't include all these sound waves and you know, then you know how to fight your enemy.
But it does include those sound waves. I think it does include those sound waves. To be honest, I think that, okay, so have you guys heard of the Four Agreements, right? The have anybody? No? I think I've played them here lately.
It's
a book about words being spells, right? And and the power of the word, you know, definitely comes into play here when we're talking about spells, right? And gosh, there was one other thing that you said, and I had a point, but I forgot it now. I'll probably call it out later. Aleister Crowley was
the vibration.
Talking about being in a pyramid.
Yes.
Well, by the way, the pyramids are on a pretty interesting Earth vibrational line, a ley line, with Stonehenge and others. So the Earth itself vibrates, you know, and people, there is scientific fact around the electromagnetic field, and we conceptualize this as a torus, if you think of a bagel.
I remember what it was. Hold on. I'm going to lose it if I don't say it. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
But, so the term dissonance. Right.
Uh-huh.
Like that. So that's where I was going at with the four agreements and words being spells and things like that, is that I think that this black magic spell or whatever you want to say that keeps people ignorant of what's actually going on in our world. When people actually come out and say those kind of counter spells of actual truth, you know, it's, you know, and people have these really like, violent reactions to truth because the dissonance of what their head has been exposed to their whole lives, the truths that keep these people, their truths that keep these people under spells, that truth is a dissonance. And that's a musical frequency term where, you know, another, frequency comes in to their reality and they're like, oh, that hurts. I can't, you know, it's just, it's wrong. It feels wrong to them.
They lash out. They lash out and attack you.
Right.
And
well,
like,
there's actually a psychological term for that, that triggers frustration and aggression, which is a known behavioral response, which is cognitive dissonance. You can go back into the 60s and 70s. Some of the work of social psychologists and then later political psychologists, Peg Herman and others, Daryl Bem, Alexander George, people looking at pieces of information that challenge basic beliefs. So you could separate attitudes from basic beliefs. Basic beliefs might be about whether or not you think humans are good or bad. Attitudes might be more about, you know, I like this, I like that, and Democrats bad, others good, you know.
Yes, program.
We all hold those beliefs. That is, we all hold some structure. And then when we have information that conflicts with that, there's an instability. And the model, a lot of them were talking about kind of a air conditioner, a cybernetic theory, where the air conditioner, when it gets hot, the air conditioner kicks on to try and rebalance. And so these people get angry to try to rebalance because they have to situate that belief and say, well, that's that person. That's not in general. But if you get that enough, you start to the belief system collapses.
Yeah.
And they do have
an idea. There's a really good, show, documentary, I guess you could say, that I played on the show before that talks about specifically cognitive dissonance when it comes to 9/11, right? And how, because that's such a good example of, just psychiatrists and psychologists talking about cognitive dissonance and their own experience around cognitive dissonance. And, you know, like there's this one lady a psychologist who tells a story about, 9/11. And I think it was her brother that gave her a paper that was written by somebody that she really admired that just kind of like destroyed in a scientific way the general narrative around 9/11 and how those buildings collapsed. And so when she took in this information from this source that she really trusted, she said she had a physical reaction, nauseous. She was, you know, wanting to cry, like, you know, but, you know, that's what happens when somebody who is very well balanced and very well, you know, in control of their emotions is presented with a truth that they held a different belief in. So, you know, most people, you know, will go on the, you know, on the attack and say, no, this person is wrong. And actually, even worse, attack their personality, the personality of the person giving them this information, and anything besides lose their worldview and their comfort zone and all of that.
Which is a sign of narcissism, by the way. This is especially strong in the narcissistic personality.
Now, there was an amazing clip of Tucker Carlson on his free time going to a libertarian rally, and Jesse Ventura was speaking at it. So I don't know how long ago this was, but the little reporter guys that were talking to him, they're like, they got him outside the venue on the street, and they said, so I guess you didn't like Jesse very much because you know, off you went. And it's just, and he's like, yeah, because he started talking about that 9/11 bullshit. And the guys kind of pulled him a little bit, and his true colors came out to where this is Tucker, morons like you that believe in the 9/11, you know.
Yeah.
False.
And what year was this?
You and here,
well,
Jesse
Ventura was still relevant.
I recently saw an interview that Tucker used to be a big Iraq war conservative, and
is it the red pilled one?
Yeah, well, I guess.
I have that downloaded.
And he was at his home. It was a friend of his, and he said that he used to. Yeah, well, he came to. What was the site? I'll have to dig it up. Was it the red pill interview? Was that it?
Yeah, I've got it, actually. I can play it. However,
it
okay, well, we've got plenty of time. I can play that first. But I do want to get back to you that,
it's
you know,
that
whole conversation about this one's not. This is just a clip of him actually specifically talking about, you know, how he's ashamed at how he acted in the past.
As a journalist. As a journalist.
I was like, wow, you who are blowing up the government left and right, you still think you trust your government on 9/11? I was like, wow. And it didn't really even matter how long ago it was, because he was pretty adamant that, you know, you're a moronic nut job and you're the problem and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, this is interesting. But that type of reaction, that's the reaction that you get from – it's like somebody's in control of your brain here. They won't let you unclick it, the lock, open the little door and listen to all this. And he's like, those are just coincidences. And I'm like, there's a lot of coincidences.
Well, you go back to some of the biggest crises in our foreign policy. There were studies. Irving Janis at Harvard did a study called groupthink, which is now popular lexicon. We talk about it, but it means everyone is cult. It's like a cult behavior in a group, which is incredibly dangerous. Like I was asked a question about Silicon Valley Bank, and they had groupthink going on, and that's really dangerous for an investment committee because they didn't have anybody who is a renegade to challenge others' basic beliefs or how they were accepting information. So the information filters are what shape what you are able to decide later on. So disagreement and even, you know, there's even similar studies when there's just a single female is included in a board, like a corporate board. All of a sudden the company becomes more profitable because they make better decisions. Just one female. Like, so it's not all male. It's not all assumed identity, and it's not all assumed agreement. And, you know, just that alone is enough to change the dynamic. One person. And so, you know, we have a mass psychosis and a group think. You can describe the left that way. And it's not healthy. They do not make good decisions. Like the mandates or civil rights or war, right?
Yeah.
And even Jimmy Dore even admits that he was soaking up all that, all the COVID narrative until he was vaccine injured. And then he started to go down the rabbit hole. And it wasn't, so it wasn't until his life was personally affected that he actually looked into it to question it. He was just as guilty as the rest of the, you know, the shit libs doing this, you know, the, what is it? The lockdown left that, you know, mm-hmm. COVIDians. I think that's what Jimmy Dore calls him anyway, but he would have been on that same page. And actually, like, my husband donates to Jimmy Dore, and at the beginning of the pandemic, and again, I fell for it for 2 weeks. I fell for the trauma-based mind control for 2 weeks. And then I, you know, my logical brain kicked back in and I was fine. But so my husband, donates to Jimmy Dore, and a couple months in, and he was still spewing all this shit, I almost made him unsubscribe. And then just in the nick of time, he actually got vaccine injured. And so we were able to stay friends. But, you know,
so these are beliefs about institutions, right? It is a lot of cognitive energy, and you wind up as an anarchist, basically, you know, very, very paranoid in not really able to organize many people if you have a complete distrust of all institutions all the time just as a default. That is a very costly belief system. And so we have to trust some of them. We trust the schools and we trust the teachers. We want to trust the doctors.
I don't trust the schools.
Okay, but you start there until you don't. And there's a threshold.
I think the forestry department. I might still trust the forestry department. That might be it.
I don't know about all of it. But I think that's their ultimate extra secret weapon is that they have us like crazy people because you can't trust these. You look at it and it's like they all have a thread of corruption and they've got this agenda and it's not of any good for us. It definitely isn't. And I wonder if they don't just stoke that to make your natural skepticism, because it was all these things from the past was you don't trust people that aren't family. You don't have this. There's some old adages I can't think of now, but now we don't live that way anymore. Privacy, right to privacy. Now you don't have any of it, but it used to be very sacred, and there was a law to protect it, and that's how different things are.
So I'm still looking for that Tucker video, but in the meantime, I would just like to circle back, yes, I said it, to what we were talking about earlier with the vibrations and things like that, because I want to play a really – and this is also about censorship. So I want to play this interview with Graham Hancock and Russell Brand just happened. It is so good. And they even talk about pyramids and vibrations and stuff like that. So can I play that while I look for this Tucker clip?
Absolutely. And, you know, with all of this onslaught of the vibrations, you see this up in the sky. Just look up in the sky and you can see the clouds. The clouds look like they were ripples, like if you had taken and thrown a rock into the river or a lake. And how it ripples out. My whole sky looked like that yesterday. That was waves.
Sometimes mine takes a herringbone pattern. That's kind of there were circles the
but
other day.
You can see that there is something in the atmosphere, and these are EMFs or whatever. These are frequencies making the clouds look like this, but also making you feel a certain way. Because I was very stressed and irritable and anxious.
If they're metallic, then we have real problems. You know, that's a different, a completely different frequency than a lot of what's in our body.
Mm-hmm. Yes, agreed.
But that's a very real thing. So, 3, 2, 1, roll tape.
Okay. Oh, and so just a little heads, like a little, intro is that Graham Hancock is, you know, I think he's an anthropologist and archaeologist, and he's got some very different theories about the, you know, time frames of world history. And, you know, like, for instance, he believes that the pyramids were underwater at one point, meaning that whoever built them predated the Egyptians by a very long time. He says that we're a species with amnesia, that there's a forgotten period in our history, that we're still living in the Dark Ages because the, you know, basically establishment anthropologists, archaeologist communities are not allowing us to know the real truth. And Russell Brand doesn't really need an intro. We all know who he is. So here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Is it possible that the elites are hiding secrets bigger than we ever dared to imagine? Yes! Hello there, you 6.3 million Awakening Wonders. Thanks for joining us on this voyage towards truth and freedom. We must cultivate and nurture the light within so that the truth that is evident can be realized within and without. Turn on the notification bell right now so that you don't miss these daily bulletins. We work hard to make them for you. Without you, we are nothing. Subscribe right now because there's content every single day. Have you noticed that censorship has radically increased? That conversations that used to be ordinary and innocuous are suddenly being censored. The meaning of words is changing. They're flipping our reality all around us, trying to befuddle and bemuse us so we can't confidently communicate with one another. I had a conversation with Graham Hancock, author, archaeologist, and TV presenter, about arcane civilizations, and in particular, why is it that mainstream archaeology and the mainstream media are so keen to shut down conversations about subjects that just 10, 20 years ago would have seemed commonplace? Why are they trying to prevent us talking about the origins of our species? Varying theories. How are we going to evolve and learn more if we don't include peripheral dissenting voices? What happens if we don't even have the right to be wrong? Imagine, for example, that Graham Hancock's wrong and there wasn't a cataclysmic event that wiped out a civilization. Oh, okay then, that's just a theory that was wrong. Have a look at this conversation. You're going to love it. It's fantastic. Stay to the very end. Let me know in the comments what questions you'd like to have seen asked. Remember, the entire conversation is up on Rumble and also available as a podcast.
Were you not upset, like, your wife's Zamfe, she's a woman of colour. What about when they're saying you're racist? Didn't that make you think, why don't you fuck off?
Yeah, I did make me think, why don't you fuck off? You fucking deceitful liars. You know, this is where I speak of a propaganda war, because it's as though they selected certain key words. If we can apply these key words, if enough people repeat these key words, then people won't read any of Hancock's work or look at his series. And those key words included saying that my work supports white supremacy, that it encourages racism, that it's misogynistic, and that it's anti-Semitic. All of those phrases were applied to my series. I don't understand why.
No,
except,
not why.
Except to say.
I'm against all those things.
if we stick these labels enough, and if enough people repeat these labels, then people say, well, we won't bother reading Hancock because he's a racist and a white supremacist. And that seemed to be the idea. That's propaganda. That's not real
propaganda.
Scientific debate. That was going on there. So
you're right, because archaeology in particular could afford a spirit of amateurism. Like my understanding, like from people like Sheldrake and stuff, is that, you know, that even much botany and biology emerged out of like priest class. It was almost an amateur pursuit of religious folk. And of course, there's a place for experts, as you say, with your pilot analogy. Of course, you need expertise, but what you don't need is technocracy and aristocracy, a institutionalized elite class that's saying we're the only people that are allowed to discuss this. You see it in the media all the time. We're spoken to like we are stupid. We are cast in the role of subjugates, of children.
Yes.
That's how the discourse takes place. Have a look at that Fauci clip. Have a look at the sort of like the orthodox, what do I want to say, Pharisee-like contempt that is dispatched by people in positions of scientific authority. Of course, if you're in a position of scientific authority, you have scientific authority. That's where it ends. It's not authority to start telling people what to do, shut shit down. Like, it starts to, what they appear to do is demark a territory where the expertise is difficult to dispute and then use that as a point of departure for applicable authority, despotism, and tyranny. And once you start saying, hey, maybe the past isn't what we think is, should we look at some new ideas? It's always been the case that advancing and emergent ideas come from the periphery because the establishment has a vested interest in containing its a personal set of human hermeneutics, its own personal epistemology. It guards it, for that is the source of its power. Once you break open the tabernacle and start saying, hey, why don't we all have a look around? How about we all have our own relationship with God? How about we all, like, that doesn't mean you're going to let some nitwit be in charge of an aeroplane or a pandemic response, but you do also want to know, are the people in charge of this response financially invested in particular outcomes? Are we getting all of the available information? Is the media unbiased? Are they giving us, are they allowing all potential voices to participate in this conversation? Oddly, for all of their talk of diversity, they seem pretty interested in exclusivity and in particular exclusion. And so I suppose, like, your particular case demonstrates what these forces will do when a new emergent voice is heard and becomes popular, even if it seems odd to use phrases like anti-Semitism, misogyny, and it don't make sense even.
The racism thing really hurt me. At the personal level, because as you rightly say, Santhe is a woman of color. She's from South Indian origin, born in Malaysia. We have mixed-race children. And to be publicly labeled as a racist, I have to confess that really hurt me. It wounded me deeply. And I couldn't get why that was being flung at me, except that it would be a useful way to turn people off my work. And that's the propaganda aspect of this, that I realize that I am involved in a propaganda war. And that needs to be taken seriously if I'm going to get my point of view across. And the other thing is, and we'll come on to this Amazon issue. So archaeologists claim, or archaeology as an institution claims, that they know enough about the past to rule out completely any possibility of any kind of thing that we would call a civilization during the Ice Age. But there's a real problem with that, because archaeology has only investigated tiny areas of the world. A great deal of archaeology that's done is done because a road or a dam is being built. And archaeologists are called in to make sure that there's nothing of historical interest in there. So it's random in that sense, the areas that they're looking at. Then, most important to me, is that issue of sea level rise at the end of the Ice Age. That 400-foot rise in sea level that occurred when the Ice Age came to an end. The 27 million square kilometers of continental shelves that were swallowed up by the sea at that time, which have hardly been investigated by archaeology. There is some marine archaeology. They're even beginning now, just in the last few years, to look at the continental shelves. And that's when the whole notion of Doggerland was discovered, that Britain was joined to the continent and that there were people there.
Steady.
But most,
we did that Brexit once.
Yes.
And we'll do it again if we have to.
Even if it takes an ice age. Yeah. So the main focus of marine archaeology is on shipwrecks from relatively recent history. There needs to be a much more comprehensive survey of the continental shelves before we can write off the possibility of a civilization destroyed in that cataclysm. And it's not only the continental shelves. Then you've got the 9 million square kilometers of the Sahara Desert. We know for sure that there were periods during the Ice Age when the Sahara was rich and fertile. Huge river systems ran through it. There were lakes in the Sahara. And yet, because it's remote, because it's very expensive to operate there, very little archaeology has been done in the Sahara. So that's another 9 million square kilometers of the Earth's surface that archaeology really doesn't know a lot about. And then there's the Amazon rainforest. It used to be about 7 million square kilometers, but these horrific clearances that have been taking place in the Amazon have brought it down to closer to 5 to 6 million square kilometers that are still untouched under canopy rainforest. This is another area where only very minimal archaeology has been done. And for archaeology to claim that it knows everything about our past while it's not investigated the continental shelves, it's not investigated the Sahara Desert, and it's not investigated the Amazon rainforest, is a terrible oversight, in my view, particularly since, I repeat, I'm not against individual archaeologists. I'm against the institution. And there are archaeologists now working with a technology called LIDAR, light imaging and detecting and ranging, which you fly a plane over the area that you want to look at, and it can look down through the canopy of the Amazon rainforest
and it can see what's underneath it. And what they're finding is evidence of enormous cities that existed in the Amazon. Oddly enough, those cities were actually spoken about by a Spanish traveler in the late 1500s. Why did they vanish? Because the Spanish brought with them smallpox. And the smallpox completely destroyed the populations of the Amazon. But at one time, it was a flourishing, highly populated area. Secondly, they were creating enormous sacred constructions, things that we would call henges today, like Avebury Henge, that deep circular trench that surrounds Avebury. In the Amazon, the LIDAR technology is finding dozens and dozens of examples of these. Enormous henges. Some of them are circular, some of them are square, some of them enclose a circle within a square. It's all very geometrical. It's most unexpected in the Amazon, and it's very, very, very old. Been detected by LIDAR, they've been physically examined in places that have been already cleared of rainforest. They definitely exist. They're definitely old. And what's needed now is a much more thorough investigation of the Amazon rainforest itself by archaeology, if archaeology wishes to continue to claim that it knows everything about the human past.
It's analogous in many ways to fields that I pay more attention to myself, where there is an assumption that where there has been no exploration or observation, nothing exists.
Yeah.
There's nothing there. Have you looked yet?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Brian Cox, who's someone I actually really like, he's an atheist and stuff, like he said, if you can't measure it, it isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like, but surely that means that we are limiting all potential realities to the realities that can be contained by sensory instruments that by their nature must be limited.
Yeah, literally to weighing, measuring, and counting.
Yes.
Reality is confined to what we can weigh, measure, and count. That is largely the position of mainstream science in this area. This is where Rupert Sheldrake gets himself into so much trouble, because you can't weigh, measure, and count telepathy, for example. You can do scientific experiments concerning it, and Rupert has done so. His work is scientifically rigorous, but it's dismissed automatically because most scientists say, of course there's no such thing as telepathy. The brain is the generator of all consciousness, and it's limited to our bodies, and it cannot communicate with other brains without words or language in between.
It's necessarily speculative to include Carl Sagan's beautiful idea that everything ever said is still reverberating limitlessly in space, that TV broadcasts in the 1940s emanate still there amidst the limitless. And if you can accept that vibration operates in that way and there is a vibrational quality to consciousness, the idea that consciousness could be intercommunicative, speculatively at least, that seems plausible. But within this idea that only that which can be measured can be real is the ridiculous assumption that by some extraordinary coincidence we have been endowed with all potential instruments for discerning all potential realities,
yes,
when even most basic mainstream cosmology includes the idea of infinity and eternity. Wouldn't it be an extraordinary coincidence that on one hand you accept the infinite and on the other hand you say, but we have got all of the necessary instruments to evaluate the infinite? That is ludicrous.
Yeah, it's ludicrous. It's true arrogance and hubris. I've noticed it in the cherry-picking of my work that critics do. I have from time to time, I think it might take up two pages in America Before, a book I published in 2019, and maybe a page or two in other earlier books, where I've speculated, is this lost civilization that I'm looking for, did they have other ways of manipulating matter that we don't have? Should I perhaps take seriously the ancient Egyptian traditions of priests chanting and raising blocks into the air? Should I take that seriously? And I actually think I should take that seriously, because I've climbed the Great Pyramid 5 times, and it's an incredibly difficult, impossible monument to explain. Everything about it is just mind-blowing. And the notion that huge long ramps, which sloping at 10 degrees, that teams of people pulled 20, 30, 70-ton blocks up and deposited them inside the Great Pyramid above the King's Chamber at about 300 feet above the ground, I think that the conventional method of explaining that is very limited. And I think we should be open to the possibility that we are not the masters of everything that human beings can do, and that it is possible that people did things in a different way in the past, that telekinesis may have been a real power. Now, the point I want to make is that in my work, that is a tiny fraction of 1% of what I write, and I label it from the beginning as speculation. Mm. But when archaeologists critique my work, that's what they focus on. Hancock believes in telepathy and telekinesis. He's obviously a lunatic. Once again, we're dealing with propaganda, and once again, we're dealing with a fixed paradigm about what reality is.
Racist Hancock believes that Mind Lego made Egypt. It's like what they'll do, even with a conversation like this one, they'll find the bits that are like, you know, what that does is it inhibits the spirit of mental adventure.
Yeah.
The commodity of imagination is our great gift. That all of the wonders of the world come via the human imagination. That it's a gift that is equally endowed upon us all. Mm. That we might all embark on these ideas. What they want to do is foreclose. No, you're not an expert. Where are you from? Who do you think you are? Shut your mouth. Where do you get that accent? Mm. We'll find a reason to shut you down. They'll find a reason to stop you investigating. Why? Because establishment interests have to be observed.
Yeah.
People that say that no change is necessary are people that benefit from things saying the same. And it's in particular in your work, because it seems odd to me that sort of it's not whimsical, because it couldn't be more important where human beings come from. I'm obviously not being dismissive of your work, but it's not like your field is about directly about how power structures should be organized. It's not like that your work is that, you know, make Pfizer accountable for their profits in the last couple of years, or did the CIA kill JFK? Like, it's not like you're going into territory where it's like, whoa, what's this dude saying? It's like fascinating musings about the great mystery of humankind.
Yeah, that's the other thing. They label my work as a conspiracy theorist. But conspiracy theorist, Graham, I don't know what conspiracy theory I'm part of. I don't have any conspiracy theory. I don't even think archaeologists are in a conspiracy. I don't think it's a conspiracy. I think once you commit to a particular profession, you commit to the ruling paradigm of that profession. And that's what's happening. It's not like we're hiding the truth. I don't think archaeology is hiding the truth about our past. I just think they're not looking in the right places, and they haven't looked enough to make dominant statements about the past. That's the view that I have on that. So this is another one of those key phrases in our society that can be applied without any effort or energy on the part of the person applying them, with complete idleness. Just call him a conspiracy theorist. Just call him a racist. Just call him a white supremacist. Call him an anti-Semite, and we'll turn people off his work right away. This is the problem that we're dealing with, and it's a sinister trend in our society that is not limited to the field that I work in. It's right across our society now. And while it is often claimed that we live in the era of great freedom, I'm not sure that we do. I think we live in an era of very sophisticated mind control. I'm not sure how much planning there is behind that. I'm not certain how much coordination there is behind that, but the tools and the techniques are available, and propaganda is one of those tools and techniques to shut down alternative narratives, that there must be one controlling narrative that runs our society, and that anything that questions that be shut down, and any dirty trick that can be deployed to question that will be deployed.
Well, if you enjoyed that conversation, let me know in the comments. Give us a thumbs up, subscribe, share this conversation with your friends. Let us know what other guests you'd like to see on our show. Watch the whole thing over on Rumble and become a member of our community to get access to my stand-up special, Brandemic, or you can buy it for a one-off $20 fee. If you enjoyed this video, watch either of these, but more important than any of that stuff is that you please stay free.
Okay.
A couple big things really right off is that you can see Graham Hancock, his work on Ancient Apocalypse on Netflix, and it's good.
Oh, yeah. So
good. Four or five, yeah. And, you know, so his comments about the Ice Age and archaeology, you can see for yourself.
Yes. And what's it called again? The Netflix?
Ancient Apocalypse. So they're talking about the Ice Age, you know, when things changed. One thing he didn't say, but the rub is that he feels, and it's not just his work, by the way. He's also citing people from other countries who are local archaeologists who are valued in that country, work for the government of that country, you know, different places. is that the Ice Age and this big flood occurred in maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
And so how can you go from an ice, you know, ice tundras to flood all of a sudden?
Yeah. Well,
that's awfully fast.
Is he speaking of the Unger Dryas?
That period.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah.
And,
it's just, there's just no way.
Yeah. Now, I would like to point out, you know, first of all, Russell's dropping some heavy philosophy language. Like epistemology means how do we know? And hermeneutics is the original social science of interpreting the Bible or interpreting things that humans made. So artifacts, artifice, that's what archaeology does, is interpret human structure. Mm-hmm. But so he's basically talking for a long time, the only social science was the church, arguing about what the Bible said. You know, what does this text mean? You know? And if you think back about the Indiana Jones movies, which is easily the most famous archaeologist in our culture, because we don't know any, right? There are a few that are kind of known, but archaeology is a new sport. What's that?
I was going to say, side note, you know the kid that they call the Indiana Jones?
No.
He works at the Chicago Oriental Museum. He goes out. Yeah.
Well, my point is that if you watch it, he's at elite schools, okay? And archaeology was not something that was funded except by governments of kings and queens. And so you had royal societies of archaeology and Egyptology. The British were really interested in Egypt, and they were the only ones doing the work. Like, the Egyptian government wasn't doing the work for years and years and years. So really, this is about a 150-year-old sport. And the only people who did it were the people who had big-time money, like the Dartmouths, the Harvards, you know, something like that, Columbia, Yale.
Sent by the
They're
queen
have
sitting
the money.
On the rock.
Yeah, and, right. The descendants, right, the universities, Dartmouth is literally descendants of the king. That was the king's property. And so those are the only ones. And so when you had public schools develop sociology departments and political science department after World War II, so you're getting into the 40s and the 50s where an anthropology department might be its own place, okay? And in a state school, so University of Kentucky's anthropology department might have two or three archaeologists, all right?
Yeah.
And so there's no money for this, none. And that's what his point was. You know, when they go clear an oil field, they maybe get an archaeologist, you know? But so they're doing geoscience. And I like his perspective. It's really good.
I love him. I would, you know, in my head, we're already friends, but I would love to be friends with him one day. He's just such an amazing person, in my opinion. I did happen to find that Tucker Carlson clip. It's only 7 minutes. It's actually Jimmy Dore covered the portions of that 1 hour interview that we all wanted to hear. So if with your permission, unless we want to talk a little bit more about this, fine.
One last point. Is that that Russell Brand makes a point about discourse and openness. I think that's why we were bringing this all in, about scientific discourse and exploration and things like that. The history of scientific paradigm shift, he used that, is because he said that he thinks people aren't looking in the right place, that there isn't a conspiracy. There isn't a conspiracy necessarily, except that the money and all of the publication locations are monopolized. So coordinated. They're in the same language. So archaeology in Mexico is now published in English. Okay. And because Blackwell owns all of them globally, all the journals that you're going to go publish. So then those are the people who certify what is good knowledge and bad. And so all scientific discovery, if you go read Thomas Kuhn, The History of Scientific Revolutions, his book, it's very easy to read. Though people who were fluent and good, like Graham Hancock, but were outside of the establishment, are the only people who have made innovations. So in other words, science is very good at filling in the blanks of what around a certain inside the sandbox, but it is not good at changing the sandbox at all.
Absolutely.
No, because it's owned by three guys, right?
It
I'm kind of disappointed. I'm really disappointed in Graham that he didn't you know, he's off the reservation on so many things, but he didn't talk about the German archaeologists that went to Antarctica, who were, you know, nobody's supposed to know what's down there. And there's a lot down there. And I was like, no, they are hiding. They are. Your career is destroyed. Your paper isn't published.
There's like a history program on that now. Finding Hitler, I think it is. And Joe Rogan did a great interview with the guy who did that. Yeah, South America and Chile. And he said there were 300 communities of German-only speaking people in Uruguay, Chile, and Argentina. And you know, I teach students from Brazil, and they're German, right?
Yes.
And their parents are German. Their grandparents are German, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I personally used to play around with Google Earth, and I went down to Antarctica, and I got into a road, and I had screenshotted just unbelievable temples that had been just – I think they blew them up. They found them, and they blew them up because they weren't, like, weathered. You could see these were just amazing temples and just the wildest stuff. Rock formations and our houses, and all of my screenshots, they've been taken. I can't get them. So
that doesn't surprise me at all.
Dangerous information. And they were all from 2013, I think, is when they were down there. That should have been the biggest thing in the world. But they've been silenced. And I'm really sad that he didn't mention that. But
come on. I have to stick up for Graham here, since we're friends in my head. It was just an interview. It was like a small interview, right? Like, he's done so much stuff. You know, also, you know, his books and his research are specific to certain areas. He's got theories that are on a global level, but then he takes it down to, like, to certain areas, specific areas, like the mud flats of Utah and things like that. Where, like in New Orleans, like Louisiana area of, like, that really, like, you know, I guess kind of confirm his theories on it. So maybe he hasn't he hasn't gotten down to Antarctica yet. Yeah, it could be that he'll get there one day.
Well, he's got to stay on Netflix. Can't get kicked off that.
Well, right.
Well,
exactly.
I was gonna say, you know, you got to work within the perimeters, and he kind of still is, and it's disconcerting, but he is a cool guy. He's a cool guy for sure.
I'll tell him you said that next time we hang out. Can we do this?
The enlightenment of Tucker.
Yes, right, exactly. Everybody changes. You know, I used to be a Democrat. You know,
me too.
Things do happen. Miracles do happen. People do change, and especially in this era of revelation, I think that
rehabilitation is what I call
it. Yes, exactly. And I make amends every day for my former sins. But let's listen to Tucker and see what he has to say. So if you guys are ready.
All ready. Welcome.
Awesome. 3, 2, 1.
Tucker Carlson went on a podcast. I got to get him on this show. And he said something, I find this super interesting. Let's watch.
Like, I've spent my whole life in the media. My dad was in the media. Like, that is a big part of the revelation that's changed my life, is the media are part of the control apparatus. Like, there's no – yeah, I know, because you're younger and smarter, and you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
But what if you're me and you spent your whole life in that world? And to look around and all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow. Not only are they part of the problem, but I spent most of my life being part of the problem defending the Iraq War. Like, I actually did that. Can you imagine if you did that?
Well, what do you think – what is one of your biggest regrets in your career?
Oh, defending the Iraq War.
That is it?
Well, I've had a million regrets, not being more skeptical, calling people names when I should have listened to what they were saying. Look, when someone makes a claim, there's only one question that's important at the very beginning, which is the claim true or not?
Hmm.
So I say, you know, you committed murder – or you rigged the last election, before you attack me as a crazy person for saying that, maybe you should explain whether you did it or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And for too long, I participated in the culture where I was like, anyone who thinks outside these pre-prescribed lanes is crazy, is a conspiracy theorist. And I just really regret that. I'm ashamed that I did that. And
so he's describing what Chomsky described in Manufacturing Consent, that you could have a rigorous debate, but it's got to be inside these two parameters. And he's talking about when someone ever went outside those parameters, he called him a conspiracy theorist and a crazy.
Lord Overton's window.
Partly it was age. Partly it was the world that I grew up in. So when you look at me and you're like, yeah, of course they're part of the means of control. I'm like, that's obvious to you because you're 28, but I just didn't see it at all. And I'm ashamed of that.
Isn't that what the media tries to do, though?
It's their only purpose.
Right.
They're not here to inform you. Really? Even on the big things that really matter, like the economy and war and COVID and like things that really matter that will affect you. No, their job is not to inform you. They are working for the small group of people who actually run the world. They're their servants. They're their Praetorian Guard. And we should treat them with maximum contempt because they have earned it.
Now, everything he said there is 100% true. And it is amazing to see that that's just not a guy who works at a corporate news station. That's a guy who has the number one corporate news show in America. That more Democrats watch in the demo, watch Tucker Carlson than watch MSNBC. So that's a big deal that he's come to this realization. That's a huge realization. And that's why I think he's allowed. I think I'm not allowed. I think that's why he's able to do the best reporting on Syria, do the best reporting on Ukraine. I mean, he's wiping the floor with everybody else on that. And that's he's going against the biggest narrative, the war narrative. You can't go against that. He also went against the COVID narrative. And now he sees, according to his own words, that the media is part of the control apparatus of the oligarchs. And they're not there to inform you. Just like Chomsky said, they're there to manufacture consent for what the oligarchy who pays them wants them to manufacture consent for. And that's why he's catching so much hell and hate. It's because he's going against the war narrative, for one, and he went against the COVID narrative. But they had already gotten rid of his advertisers, right? So now the only people left advertising on his shows is Mike the Pillow Guy and catheter commercials and things like that. I don't think he gets any big pharma funding or anything like that. I don't watch news anymore, so I don't know. But and that's why he can tell the truth, because they already got rid of his advertisers. So I think it's exciting to me that – can you imagine if Rachel Maddow was saying that or Anderson Cooper was saying that?
Or just someone you know personally had the balls to say that. Just anyone you know personally that was a Branch Covidian or a whatever.
Yeah.
Would even have the guts of a Tucker Carlson, right, what he just said.
I'm going to stop it there because the rest of it's just analysis by Jimmy Dore and Kurt Metzger, which, maybe one day I'll play the whole thing. But Elizabeth, especially, what do you think about that? I'm sure you had a bitter taste in your mouth about Tucker because of his past sins. But do you still hate him, or do you still think he's controlled opposition? What's your thoughts on these?
He did not go out. Everybody is against the war in Iraq. That whole.
He wasn't.
Well, now he's like, oh, now I can see it. He didn't go the next step into 9/11. So I'm really wondering whether he still has those really deep feelings that, Alex Jones and Jesse Ventura and anybody.
Now, is that the next step or is that the previous step?
I don't know. See, I don't know. I don't not like him. Let's base upon the fact that everything is controlled. And why would they let certain people have a platform to, holes in their stories and in their reality, if not to control all of us?
Sure.
I do
understand what you're saying. Let me just ask this. Is it that he was... he's controlled opposition, allowing him to say certain things, or is it because he's establishment and he woke up? Our friend Really Graceful on YouTube, she already had more than 1 million followers doing makeup tutorials before she woke up. And then she used her platform to change subjects than it, you know, first and foremost into pedo-gate, you know? And so those are just my thoughts on this. Can people change? Can people wake up? I mean, I did. Zach did. Why couldn't Tucker?
He may be under contract and have really good lawyers, so wait until his contract runs out. Plus, they're making a lot of money, too. I mean, Disney owns Fox now.
Yeah.
And there are sometimes
– even Democrats watch Tucker.
Yeah, well, and there are some times that the call comes from upstairs and, you know, but I also think you have to have possibility and openness that it's not – that it might not all be controlled. There might be people who are willing to risk their career and aren't getting eliminated, you know.
Right.
Jimmy Dore is still on YouTube. How come they never kicked Jimmy Dore off YouTube, right?
Because
was he controlled opposition?
Lawyer.
He's got a great lawyer. All right. Well, maybe that's the lesson.
He's admitted it. You know, because there have been certain videos that have been demonetized, and he talks about it on his show. And that's why he does that little comedy bit that anytime he calls out a pharmaceutical company, he's like, I have to tell you that vaccines are safe and effective. And they make my heart swell for pride, not because of myocarditis. You know what I mean? Like he does, bit or whatever.
I started paying attention to Tucker when he was the only person, and not that I watch the show all that time, but sometimes when I hear people chattering about, oh, I'll go watch an interview. He was the only person. First of all, he'll put Greenwald on. He'll put people from the left on and other journalists. But then also he was the only person on TV, or what we call TV broadcast, that was opposed to going to war against Syria. And everybody, you know, the whole establishment was a foregone conclusion. And he was the only one saying, why? Wait a minute. What in the heck's going on? You know? So, if I look at their behavior, if they do the right thing and they're moving the needle the right way, then, you know, we always have to pay attention to the, is that enough? But that means that what other people do has got to be enough for us anyway, right?
Right. Well, and you look at like things like people like Sean Hannity, right? There are some things that Sean Hannity says that I believe. But however, he's a fucking war hawk and I can't stand him.
Yeah.
And he, you know what I mean? Like I can't, but however, if he says something that's true, I'm not going to not believe it because he's a war hawk. Does that make sense?
For the longest time in a research community that I was working with, We knew very early that the Russia stuff was fraudulent and we were following the document trail, reading everything. And this stuff is incredibly boring to read, right? But we knew that very early on. So almost all of our site, we had no – I was writing emails about once a week to Aaron Mate and other people saying, you guys got to get on the stick. And because this is not enough, you're hedging too much. Now they're like they sing all over the place, right? And Matt Taibbi sings all over the place about Russiagate. But there was a time when they were very, very slow. And I don't know. I just totally lost my train of thought with all of that.
Well, no, and I totally get it, especially with the Aaron Mate thing. He was definitely slow to start. But you're right.
They were all right wing sources. There were conservative sources, conservative treehouse, Sundance. You can't get a better person to give you national security stuff. He has been much more accurate than anybody for a long time. American Thinker, the pieces that they did. It's just like not even in the same league as what The Intercept was doing, what other people were saying. Anybody, you know, on the left. No, just anybody. Can I, you know, raise your finger, lick it and raise your finger. Is the wind coming from that direction at all? Any reporting about facts? And these guys were bringing receipts and they were all on the right. So you can imagine I had to take these and deliver them. This is the stuff that I was briefing Howie Hawkins with, except I was giving him the original documents. And it was
I don't know why you weren't adding in the Bernie supporters. The Bernie supporters are the ones that knew from the very beginning.
Well,
Are Bernie supporters right wing?
They felt no, and but they folded into all their media sources were folded into the Democratic Party narrative. They, you know, it was incredible that you had someone running an anti-corporate campaign all of a sudden everyone kind of dispersed. And
I was a big fan of the Young Turks at first. I got to admit that, too.
There you go. There you go. Well, at the beginning, they were good.
Yeah. And then they went, and then they got what, like $27 million from the Clinton campaign?
Well, that'll change things, won't it?
And it sure did. He got mad in the other directions for sure. That's a fact.
Yeah.
And
but
that's
so, so the truth
and, you
was
know,
being told by
on Young Turks, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
the truth was being told by only right-wing journalists. Right, only conservatives, and I kept saying, "Where's the? Since when don't we report about the security state fouling up? And this is clearly unconstitutional and un-American, and that this violates liberal ideas. Why in the world?" And we're talking journalists, activists. It was unreal, unreal. So the only people who told the truth for 3 years were conservatives. I mean,
and Julian Assange.
Anybody who bumped what they wanted not to be said was gone. Oberman, Keith Oberman, I loved him. He was very vocal and had a free reign of opinion. He crossed the line. He's gone. And who knows where he went.
He went
kind
off,
of like lost his
he
mind
went off into the cuckoo's nest. That man went off into the cuckoo's nest.
Yeah.
He did, but he was saying things that needed to be said that we were all thinking at the time, and that was not allowed on TV. Bill O'Reilly, Lou Dobbs, boy, he was going too far on the election. Boom, he's gone. I believe he's still under contract, and therefore you can't hear boo from him until his contract's over. I don't know where he's at, but if you cross that line, you're gone. And for anybody who's still left here, it's like they're serving a purpose. They're serving a purpose to entertain and keep us kind of like babysat. And they've got enough babysitters to babysit every personality out there. And that's my view right now. Because the ones that are really, really speaking, you can barely find them. Chris Hedges, the Consortium News, I can only get it through my email. You can't even find it out anywhere. You know, it's like the real reporters that are really speaking the unbiased, what's actually happening without sugarcoating or trying to explain it to you, you can't have that because you're not allowed. You're like children. We have to treat you like children.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes the opposition tells the truth because they're motivated to. They're not always motivated to lie when they don't have to, right? So the people who are of different political alignment sometimes have the smoking gun. You know, sometimes they are motivated to point out fraud, you know, and it's not just, you know, this notion that truth can only be told by people who are, you know, and I mean truth by documentary truth, by people, not necessarily moral truth, but like this happened, right? And here are the documents that could only be told by people who believe in big government, you know, is ridiculous, especially if it's a government crime. Or it's the government doing it, right? And since when does the peace movement and the left, the radical left, take, you know, kiss the butt and repeat the marching orders of the intelligence community? Since when? Since when are they our friends?
This has been subverted by the damn government. I don't think you have any real radicals out there or real. This is my assessment of what I see. Is people are just too damn apathetic and lazy and content to think that they're fighting a battle on their phones and on Twitter to get out on the streets and have a peace rally in large numbers. And
hey,
what
man,
you're
it's about,
is
this, it's
about this orchestrated paid, these paid movements of the BMLA, these are paid to go out and do this.
That's
and
AstroTurf.
That's moving.
Yeah. That's exactly. AstroTurf. It's Russia, women, and racism. The three W's.
Yes, exactly. Bravo.
Yeah, and there are legitimate campaigns, but these people have taken like a piece of silly putty and taken a facsimile, and this is the way corporate branding works, right? That Nike is a healthy, you know, a healthy athletic lifestyle. Well, tell that to the slave labor workers, right? That make this stuff. That company's rotten to the core, in my opinion. That's not an ethical lifestyle company. But that's what these people have gone – since the 90s, it's gone wild. They've taken over all aspects of our life.
Yep.
So why not get a brand that they can control and use it in government as a weapon? It has a handle, they can swing it.
Exactly.
Agreed. I was actually looking for this clip of Keith Olbermann.
Acting,
literally losing his mind.
He did a key piece in the beginning in 2011 that made him famous to people who weren't normally watching that channel. And it had to do with around Occupy and students getting tear gassed. I think it was in Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken. And they're on a campus and the campus police tear gassed them. And it snowballed, right? And so that was kind of his rise to being an Edward R. Murrow-esque delivering person of times, right? And, you know, whether he deserved that or not. And then I think he just became a version of Rachel Maddow.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And I like to watch Rachel Maddow every now and then to find out what really pisses them off. Like, what are they really worried about? Where they're not going to actually ignore it. They want to spin it. That tells me something that, ooh, that hit, you know.
Yeah.
We're worried about that.
Rachel Maddow, way back when.
Because she was intelligent. I'm like, this is amazing. But then,
I used to think she was spunky.
Whether they're spoon-fed, it's like, this is what you're going to. This is your job now. To go this way. And then she just loved it, and she went into the land of crazy. And, or maybe I changed. I don't know how that goes, how that worked.
Both. I think you're right.
I couldn't stomach. I was like, I can't watch this anymore. Could not. And even with the beauty of Hannity. Hannity doesn't even skip a beat. He went from Obama to whoever – The new evil person was. It was the same shit coming out of his mouth, but it was all because of Biden. I'm like, he's just here for these people who are just pissed off and want some justice and change, and they want to watch someone scream about how mad they are, and that's what he
does. Yeah, that's true.
He doesn't, you know? And it's like, wow.
He was friends with Trump, too. He was, like, personal friends with Trump.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't be very
yeah.
objective if you're personal friends with the leader of an administration.
Right. Right. All right, here, a quick soundbite.
The nation and all of our freedoms hang by a thread, and the military apparatus of this country is about to be handed over to scum. Who are
oh, God.
To scum.
Scum.
Russian scum.
Scum.
Russian.
I love That's it. Your... That's so classic. That's so classic. I'm going to make that my alarm clock.
Me too. Oh, my. No, but that's... That's Keith Olbermann. Like him and Cenk, Uyghur need to be friends because like they've clearly gone down the same road.
Oh, that just made my week.
Scum.
Scum. Yes, you know he had to rehearse that, do a couple takes.
Oh yeah,
probably.
In his resistance. All right, one more time.
We're going to go one more time. Give us a little more verve on the last one, would you please?
And all of our freedoms hang by a thread, and the military apparatus of this country is about to be handed over to scum, who are beholden to scum, Russian scum, Russian scum.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, he has more money than I do. Let's put it that way. So,
that's
I don't know.
True.
What happened?
Oh, come on. I did not mean to do that again. Where to go? Hold on.
No. Where is your letter of recommendation?
I'm not sure what's going on right
you
now.
You know, you can auto-tune. That would be something to auto-tune.
Paul, that is utter bull malarkey.
I really don't know what's
Daniel
going on right now.
Daniel 11:32-36 warned us of the one who will deceive with flattery, saying
no,
that we are
not.
Free from the law.
ChatGPT.
There is a Freedomizer broadcast called Everlasting Covenant Study Free from Paul.
Seriously,
it airs from noon to 3 p.m.
Danielle, you might have a screen reader going nuts.
I found it.
I like the ones with like breathy, sexy voices. You know, I actually pay more attention when it's like computer. I'm like, ah, this sucks. It's slow. Like,
yeah,
I like the ones that are like Dan, you know, they're like Sharon or something, you know?
Yes.
Sharon.
I think we're good. Mm. I think I killed it.
Okay, there you go.
Scum!
We should put that
right,
one
right,
in
hold
the,
on.
The interview.
Now, this is me. Hold on.
Archaeology, you know.
How dare you?
How dare you?
You have stolen my dreams and my childhood.
All right.
Scum!
Yeah.
Enter the comfy chair. I feel a Monty Python skit coming on. Scum, 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 scum.
Well, you know, Broken Lizard, the guys that did Super Troopers over in Colgate, they're all from Colgate, right next to Syracuse. And they're doing a new movie about the Hunchback of Notre Dame. And so we'll see.
Oh, really?
What they make these movies, and every other one is a classic, but every other one is a complete Titanic flop. So you never know.
Interesting. You know, it's been so long since anybody has anything really original, or what they will allow to be produced. And I guess you really have to look for the good ones and the independent filmmakers. But what's the last one, like, good film that came out of nowhere that you think? Because I don't think there's been a good film in, like, forever. But
we just rewatched Wedding Singer last night.
Oh, dear God. See? No case. I rested my case. Like, my left foot. Just great, great movies. We don't have that. They've even stifled our creativity. Creative arts.
I finally watched Gone with the Wind for the first time in its entirety.
What did you think of that?
With my mother, and she read the book as a child. And you know, if you're a girl in, she grew up in Jacksonville, and you're a girl growing up in the South, this is a fundamental book and model. I actually once had a girlfriend that really liked that book a lot, and would talk about it. And
the movie,
with
the
movie,
the book.
Yeah. And well, and do you know that the woman that played Mammy won an Academy Award for that role? I mean, a lot of people don't know that, and they're trying to ban that. I mean, so it's a wonderful actor performing, but this is history, and they're trying to ban that.
Yeah,
that
it's literally history. I actually we watched it not too long ago because my daughter just covered the Civil War in a history class. So I, you know, we sat down and watched, and she was like quoting things because, you know, through the movie, there's, you know, the letters that come up and stuff like that. And she would preempt the letters like, oh yeah, I know when this happened. And then there was this happened and this happened. And then there would show a letter would pop up in the movie. And she's like, oh yeah, that's why she got an A.
Yeah, yeah, great. I don't know how anyone could also say that this the as a piece of literature, this and same with To Kill a Mockingbird, in any way justifies or you could walk away from that saying, yeah, that was a good time. That was great. You know, like you feel the moral problematic very much through that film and the contradictions in it, but you're not going to rewrite history to make a story as if it didn't exist or to rewrite it as if that conflict didn't happen. Right. So there's no way to watch that, read it, and say, what's To Kill a Mockingbird? You know, there's a sense of injustice in that. How in the hell, can you walk away and say this just justifies white domination? It shows white domination.
Right.
That's what it's talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? So I'm tired of this wankerism in the elite.
Well, you know, it's wonderful that you pointed out that she was the first black woman to be able to be on stage and win an Oscar, and they want to say this was.
I don't know if she was the first.
The first black woman? Yes, she was. Hattie McDaniels, I think her name was. But Aunt Jemima.
Black entrepreneur,
The first wealthy, successful black entrepreneur, also, and no, she's by. And you're not supposed to know about this. And on your Black History Month, you have four people they always talk about. You had so many that they won't because, it doesn't
Yeah, like some of the lies. Yeah, like some of the lies about social movements. The big one, for example, that Martin Luther King's is the standout. But Rosa Parks, for example, the narrative around that is outrageous. Rosa was a trained activist. She went to the Highlander activist school. You want to talk about a professional? Mm-hmm. She went to the Highlander activist school in Tennessee. And were you trained civil disobedience and direct action? She was good enough to teach other people, right? She had been trained to train others, probably why she felt confident enough to do that action. You know, that's a solitary by yourself action because she was experienced, right? So this is not like one day you figured out she had a support group, affinity group. This was a determined, you know, campaign. And so you don't want to teach people that you could run a campaign and change City Hall. You want, like, it's okay to have kind of like, what do you want to call them? Shining totems, you know, that this person did all that. But there was an entire infrastructure. The Southern Christian Leadership Coalition was only part of that movement. You had SNCC, you had other people doing other dramatic actions and very risky actions. And yet you had others that were really slow, like, you know, the NAACP, right, that had resisted lynching in the 40s, but really we didn't want to rock the boat. We got a relationship with the administration. So having a campaign and an organization is different from having a savior, because they can sell you a savior.
You also had white college kids coming to help with these things. There was a community. They don't want us to see it.
Well, that was the whole point. It wasn't to elevate, you know, African Americans. It was to, you know, unite people because there are strengths in numbers, you know? Like that was the biggest point. And the fact that the people who idolized Martin Luther King Jr. and don't realize that the CIA/FBI assassinated him. You know what I mean? Like there's such a disconnect in information, to these heroes that the education system lifts up certain voices, a couple voices, but they certainly will never tell you that the government, assassinated MLK and Malcolm X, you know, and many others.
Well,
they also want you to think that he's all about service and community. He was standing about a resistance, peaceful resistance, and fighting for your rights.
He got that stuff from Gandhi, right? He learned, there was a period where he learned from Gandhi his work in South Africa. Because he wanted to know how that was, because it's an African struggle, right, against apartheid even then. And, there was a pretty hefty division in SNCC. And Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which was younger. And so you have the Stokely Carmichaels, and they felt that black empowerment had to happen first and you couldn't wait on white liberals, let's say, just to break this into small groups. But the bigger coalition felt like, you're right, the target was to move middle America, to move white America to face this issue. And that was the target. You know, that was the campaign, you know, communication strategy to show unearned suffering. And that's why he went and found a Bull Connor to go in harm's way, which, you know, you could start to say, geez, you know, did they have to go over that bridge? You know, knowing that would happen. He knew that would happen. And he wanted it to happen in a sense, you know, he didn't tell them to have to do it, but, you know, so, and those tactics also started to trigger people's feelings about, well, you know, how successful is that, right? Because you're relying on someone else's power to report that. You're relying on white power to do these things. All correct. I mean, you got to take it in its entirety. But, they wanted to move white America is what MLK wanted to do.
Yeah, exactly. And to unify, you know. I also think that there was an aspect of the Black Panthers that wanted to do the same thing. Although some people can call it, slightly hostile, I really see no issue with bringing guns into, people-owned buildings, right? Like this is, we say government or state-owned buildings, but those are the people's houses, right? And
that was Stokely. Yeah, that was Stokely Carmichael, and the split in SNCC became the Black Panther Party, right? And then later you had guns. Yeah. But I mean, they were, you know, they were questioning civil disobedience because you're going to get the crap beat out of yourself. So what about self-defense? You know, there's two sides to this, you know, and it was a tactic. Yeah. But it was also a tactic undergirded by a philosophy. And so they started questioning that philosophy. They kind of said,
and by the law, right? And by the law. Like, we were, you know, this is the Second Amendment. We're allowed to do these things. We're not walking in and to these buildings and allowing the, you know, the occupants of this state-owned building to take down anyone, right? And and honestly, like, I know that this is a very anti-liberal sentiment, but I really do believe that there will be less violence. The more people have guns, the less violence there will be.
Well, it's an interesting stat, you know. It'd be interesting to see, too.
In Texas, everyone is so well-behaved because everyone's caring. My sister's down there. She goes,
open carry.
People are
exactly.
They're very polite because, you know,
didn't
you
Ron White,
somebody, you say it. You say, I'm sorry, and, you know, they're carrying. They got their little holster.
Oh, boy.
And she said it's a much more
Ron
polite
White?
Society.
I was going to say Ron White has a joke that he's from Texas, and if you come to Texas and you come and kill someone, we'll kill you back. I just laugh. You know, he says if you come, to, you get the death penalty in Texas is what I'm saying. And he had you know, if you come to Texas, we'll kill you back. You didn't understand my Southern. Ah, that's what just happened there, you California guys. No, he said if you come to Texas and you kill someone, we'll kill you back, which means they'll put you in the death penalty. It's a joke that he has.
Oh, gotcha.
Ron White's a comedian. Yeah.
Ron White's good. I like him.
Yes. I think back to the Panthers, they were raising the question of what is the law? You know, even if it's on the books, if it's not enforced, there's echoes of that today. You got to question it when it's being implemented by AstroTurf organizations, not in conjunction with real civil rights organizations that or coalitions. And the tactics are destructive to the communities that they're trying to serve, right, and defend.
Yeah.
No, so rioting and burning down black-owned businesses is not any discussion I've ever heard when we had those discussions.
Right.
I think the thing about the Panthers, they were frightening because they were all of a sudden standing up for their rights and doing it in a militant fashion.
Yeah.
And there was kind of shut up, we're
well,
here.
That's the propaganda around it.
Of them. They're reacting to the American people who are standing up, the patriots, the white supremacists, they're standing up for their rights, and they're armed. It's a threat, you know, and it's like they don't know how to deal with it other than they're dangerous, that they must be done away with.
Well, you know, there was also a narrative about the Panthers that they were Maoists, and I don't really believe that. You can say
really?
That they were socialists. Well, they used to sell the little red book of Chairman Mao as a fundraiser at Berkeley. So everyone thought that, they said they hadn't even read it. They had sold probably 100 of these books, and they haven't before they even opened it. So they just knew that the left-leaning Berkeley students would buy it, and they had money. And so they were raising money doing it. And so they had this reputation as Maoist communists, and they weren't.
Yeah.
But they were cultural. They did have a cultural element to it because they were selected. Not self-selected, but they were a selected ethnic group that society was choosing, you know, so I don't know.
Right. Well, so we only have 2 minutes left, but I would also say that the Black Panthers were one of the first examples that I know of COINTELPRO, right? So this is the government, you know, infiltrating organizations and making them look as bad as possible, making everybody think that they were dangerous and militant and all of these things. But I really don't think that was the point at all of this exercise, of the Black Panther exercise.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, like, they had soup kitchens, you know. You're talking child care soup kitchens. You know, that is an anti-poverty exercise. And maybe that is threatening to certain people.
Sure is. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's exactly. It's exactly. If you're going to lift people out of poverty, that's certainly not something that the government could have entertained at that point. And so any group, you know, whether it be Malcolm X, you know, Martin Luther King, the Black Panthers, and I'm only listing African-American groups right now, but that's certainly not the end of the story. There was a lot in that
Judy
time.
Judy Berry.
Yes.
Yeah.
exactly. Well,
it's just sick, though. Like, how can a group of people be institutionalized to believe this? You know, they're not raised that way from childhood, the way the Nazis were, who raised children. How in the world do you come to that conclusion that these human beings need to be destroyed and you're going to use tax dollars to do this? It's just disgusting. I just can't rationalize.
And propaganda. That is what it is. You know, the spells that this country is under. So we've got 20 seconds left. Okay, well, this is a great show. This is, you know, one of our best, to be honest. So I love you all. Thank you.
So thanks for coming.
Yes.
Hopefully Christine will call in next time.
Every week, my rock. Please share this if you can. We love you all, and we'll see you next week.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.